So we know there's been a DOJ bipartisan cover-up for now almost 20 years of what was happening with Epstein, the Mossad MI6 CIA operative, and the huge honeypot operation he was running that he took over from Ghislaine Maxwell's father, Robert Maxwell. He also worked for former attorney general's dad at the girls' school, Barr.
Bill Barr's father, Donald Barr, was the mentor to Jeffrey Epstein. He was literally, you know, was a student of Bill Barr's dad.
The emails we have, the millions of them, are so damning. The cannibalism, the sex slavery, the genetic engineering.
There's girls that were there that testified that he had rooms as big as this room right now that were filled with servers and computers and monitors that were recording all that footage that he had, and not only on the island, but in New York, the Zora Ranch, everywhere.
He had a plane,
cameras.
The plane was rigged, and everywhere.
Where's all that footage?
I can't tell you.
Really?
Yeah. It has to be the right time, the right day.
Let me ask you this. I'm sorry to put a legendary Mossad assassin on the hot seat. But if I was to guess, do you think I would guess right?
Probably. That's why we shouldn't talk about
okay.
it right now.
All right.
And if you look at satellite photos of it and drone photos, you can see the snorkels that come up around the house and 100 yards out from it or so. Those, you don't have those big concrete air vents for structures that don't have things under them.
I will tell you the search took 11 days to actually, you know, drone out the whole entire property. So that tells you what a vast property this was and how large it was.
So we were told the feds went in with cadaver searching dogs and went in with ground penetrating radar. And now we learn none of that was true. The feds did a deal in 2019 when Trump was first in his first administration to let them run the investigation, but that they would then give the state their findings. They haven't done that.
In the Epstein files, one document describes an April 2020 account given to the FBI in Albuquerque from someone whose name is redacted and makes the unsubstantiated claim that one of Epstein's Zorro Ranch victims was raped and became pregnant before the baby was then sacrificed and buried at the Christ United Methodist Church near Albuquerque. We reached out to the FBI Public Affairs Office in Albuquerque and asked if the FBI investigated or followed up on the reported claim, and if so, what were the findings? In an email, the office responded, "We have no comment at this time."
We know from a tip back in 2019 that was never investigated that there was an allegation that two women were buried on the public leased land there. And so we are still waiting for that part of the investigation to be open.
Were human remains found? Were they not found?
I can't tell you if they were or weren't found, but I guess what I would say is, let's say cadaver dogs did not find anything. It doesn't change the fact that there maybe still could be something there.
These images of Zorro Ranch taken in the early 2000s were given to EWTN News by a former worker at the ranch. Former workers told us they would agree to speak about their time at Zorro Ranch if the New Mexico Truth Commission called on them to testify.
They need to be reached out to, preferably by law enforcement, but they will play, I think, a big role in, you know, what may or may not have happened at the ranch.
As we continue to formally commence this subcommittee, subpoenas will very likely be issued for those that do not want to voluntarily come forward and speak to us as a subcommittee.
Fundamentally, we need Todd Blanche and the United States Department of Justice to stop stonewalling this agency. It's been 173 days since we first asked for unredacted access to the complete Epstein files, and we still don't have that access, despite repeated assurances from Mr. Blanche, Jay Clayton, and others that they would cooperate with this investigation and help us move things forward so we could try and hold people accountable here in New Mexico.
Specifically, the main thing that this new bill does that we've introduced is forces the U.S. Attorney General to cooperate with state attorneys general that want to prosecute Epstein co-conspirators under state law. And it turns out in New Mexico, that's where the Zorro Ranch was. You hear a lot about Epstein Island. You hear almost nothing about Zorro Ranch, but it was expansive. It was massive. People were going there all the time. Crimes were committed there. And some of those aren't barred by statute of limitations. And so the Attorney General in New Mexico would like to prosecute those crimes. And so we're making it easier with this bill. That's one of the things it does.
The DOJ tells us that there's no human trafficking and nothing happened and Epstein killed himself. ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with benbenzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benbenzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benbenzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live from the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. Find those links there, links to the show, links to all the articles, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. Of course, some results from the primaries that were held yesterday. Some surprises and some questionable results. But the Democrats, normal and insane. I guess all Democrats are corporate and progressive. Maybe that might be another way of putting it. Are both just insane and evil and off the rails. We're going to talk about late-term abortion today. That'll be fun. Then we actually are going to have fun because we're going to be joined by Brandon Straka later in the show. We're going to talk about the future of the Republican Party, conservative politics, the rift, the divide, the MAGA slash America First divide, what it portends for the future of this country. Some results from yesterday. David Crowley pulls off stunning comeback victory over Francesca Hong. So yes, folks, the Hong is over. It's done. We don't have to think about her anymore. We don't have to look at her anymore. We can all breathe a sigh of relief. And we can all say thank you to the Democrats for cheating to make this possible, because it certainly looks like they did, which is very interesting, which means at this point, I'm pretty sure Democrats are doing more to stop the far left than the Republicans, because there are some very strange inconsistencies with the results of the election yesterday. Some very inexplicable occurrences that we'll show you in just a second, which means that Francesca Hong, the insufferable anti-white Chinese lady who was running for that office and was apparently going to, you know, 90%. She was the, you know, Hillary Clinton of this go around, 90% victory chance, and then gets blown out of the water. Is that because the polls were off, or is that because there were some shenanigans going on in the background? I say shenanigans, which, again, you got it, you know, what does this mean? What does this mean exactly? I'll give you the down low here. David Crowley just pulled off a victory in Wisconsin's Democrat primary for governor on Tuesday. That was both a stunning upset and an unheard of comeback, defeating the field's front runner with a Hail Mary effort in the final weeks of the race that was seen as a test of whether new Democratic Socialist victories in deep blue states could be replicated in Midwestern battlegrounds. Crowley defeated Francesca Hong by less than half of a percentage point in an election outcome that none of the statewide polls predicted. In every survey, including one Crowley's campaign paid for, Hong carried a double-digit lead into the race. Crowley was declared the winner by the AP early Wednesday, August 12th, after a series of reporting delays in Milwaukee, Winnebago, and Greene counties. If the slim margin in unofficial results holds, it could be within the 1% threshold at which Hong could request a recount at the campaign's expense. Quote, David is ready to get back to work, build a broad coalition, and win in November, the Crowley campaign said. Tuesday's election outcome underscored the popularity of Governor Tony Evers. Crowley's win also delivers a loss to the DSA, Democratic Socialist Movement, which has seen victories in New York, Colorado, and Michigan. Hong's loss came after a state representative spent more than a week being the subject of national scrutiny and criticism over her past media post, social media post, that called to abolish police and criticized holidays. Well, no, criticized Thanksgiving, because she's anti-white. She didn't just hate holidays. She hates white people. Crowley and Evers spent the last month of the race crisscrossing the state, arguing Hong could not beat Tiffany in a general election environment, in part because of those posts. So she basically congratulated Crowley and said she would fully support him and has accepted his victory. But we can go now to clip number 22 here, because there were some irregularities blamed on human error. And once again, you know, this is a very interesting, there's a very interesting thing happening right now. A lot of people are focusing on the MAGA divide. There is obviously an equivalent divide on the Democrat Party. They treat it differently because the Democrats tend to embrace their radicals and shrug off the things they say and make excuses for them. So the way it's playing out looks very different, but it's no less severe, this division in the Democrat Party, from the elite corporate establishment Democrats and the quote unquote grassroots DSA style progressive Democrats. And we've seen this before, right? We saw this with Bernie Sanders. Only back then, you know, the media was entirely on the side of Hillary Clinton, covering up her obvious. I mean, do y'all remember that? It was one of the craziest times of my life, I feel, is before I was working here, watching the Republican and the Democratic National Conventions in 2016. I saw some of the craziest things I've ever seen, one of which, well, the whole Democratic National Convention, the tricks they were pulling to try to silence Bernie Sanders supporters, literally playing like white noise to drown out the protesters, or training their Hillary supporters to start chanting USA, USA whenever the Bernie Sanders, and just, you could actually just see the orchestration. You could see the way it was all playing out. You could see the way in which the people who stood up to protest the results, knowing that Bernie was screwed, were like black bagged and just like rushed off. And in the middle of Hillary's acceptance speech, you'd see her sort of glare at the protesters before the chants would come up. And I mean, you could just actually see, like, this is the anatomy of a stolen election. Of course, the same thing they did with Ron Paul in 2012. So, you know, this is nothing new. However, the media landscape is different now. The political impetus is actually behind the DSA. So I think really what will be interesting is observing left-wing media, who tends to be more radical and more left-wing than the establishment Democrats. However, they're still very much in bed with and on the team of the establishment Democrats. So they're going to be trying to sort of deal with this and give cover to the establishment Democrats, while in their hearts knowing that the actual results are being manipulated. But also, they've spent the last 10 years or 5 years at least telling us that elections can't be stolen, and you're a deranged conspiracy theorist, white supremacist, for saying so. So it's going to be interesting seeing how we move forward, how they deal with what I consider to be the fact that the Democrat Party is not above rigging their own elections to get establishment characters over the more populist and popular, you know, progressive extremists. It's going to be a very interesting thing to observe. Let's go now to clip 22. This is from End Wokeness. Milwaukee says, due to human error, 5 out of 9 USBs were missing election results. Interesting.
There are two things. There's the audit log and the results. What we uncovered was that 5 of the sticks had the audit log downloaded and not the results. It's a human error. These things can happen. So basically what we need to do is go back to the operations center, and we're going to download out of those 5 machines the results and make sure that it's not the audit log.
Okay. It's a little confusing. The audit log, but not the votes. Okay. And this really was confusing, and it made for a very awkward broadcast on NBC towards the end of the night. Clip 37 here. NBC ended its live coverage of this Wisconsin Democrat primary as Milwaukee County officials announced a tabulation error in the election data. 5 out of 9 USB sticks with the absentee ballot results contained only audit logs rather than the actual vote. Here's NBC trying to deal with this and express this and handle this. Let's watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing. Let's look at it this way. We're kind of indefinitely waiting for them to get their act together here and get the sticks and bring them back and go on. And we've got folks here who are working real late. And I don't think we want to, you know, keep them here to, this could go 90 minutes. And it's 90 minutes of me saying, have you heard of any other athletes running for Congress? We've come so far here. It's been 4 hours since polls closed. It's been an unbelievably interesting and intense night here, and it really is coming down to this one giant, you know, update in Milwaukee. But man, we waited 90 minutes for them. They did this whole procession, and then they find out there's nothing on the sticks. My way of saying, I'm just trying to say the audience here, so I'm not abruptly ending on them, just why we're doing this, because the audience has been with us for 4-6 hours in some cases for this moment that didn't happen. And so folks, I think we are going to wrap it here for the reasons we're saying here, just, but I,
this
I just,
is terrible.
I want you to know, I hate,
I'm sorry. This is just awful.
You know, doing this to you. Cause we
get it out, buddy.
I know you're here for results, and yep, we've come to the point where it's like,
okay,
one thing
so there
away.
Are no results. Thanks for telling us we can move on. Right. I mean, that's the clip goes on for another like minute and a half. I'm not going to make you sit through it. Clearly they don't know what the hell's going on, but don't you get a sense of like, he knows something's not right. Can't quite say what it is. He's still going. He's up here on the screen right here. He's smiling now for some reason, like an idiot. I just get used to it, okay? Just get used to this, all right? Just get used to it. I know you're used to a world, you grew up in a world where election results were uncontested and arrived at that day, where these types of silly little mistakes that delay everything never really happened. But you can extrapolate this to the world around you, to the little things that used to just be taken care of and now aren't being taken care of. Things that used to happen quickly, happening just a little bit slower. Things that you never thought about because they just worked, now you're going to have to think about because they're not going to work anymore. I really just see this as indicative of the overall collapse. It's like, are we going to turn communist? Maybe we already did, because we can't even figure out how to hold the election to elect the communists. Like, we're in this weird sort of proto-collapse stage where we're still trying to upkeep the old forms, but we just don't quite have the human capital capable of doing it. So just, you know, don't get used to this. Earlier I said get used to it, but actually the truth is we should not be getting used to this. And I can't help but just see this everywhere. And honestly, I got to give a shout out. You know, I got to, you know, praise President Trump for his beautification of like Washington DC and stuff. And there really is a normalcy bias where you just accept collapse and you have to remind yourself not to accept collapse. Like, it just never occurred to me that the fountains could be on. Just the fountains didn't work. That's what They're there. They sort of seem like they once held water, but I'd never seen water in them in my life. Never expected to. Didn't even think it was weird that there was no water in the fountains. It's just like, yeah, what you expect us to be able to keep water in the fountains? You know, you got to clean the pipes. Somebody's got to run that stuff. And I feel like we've allowed the collapse to happen for a very long time, sort of unwittingly. Sure, we just don't notice that it's happening. And I'm sorry to do this to you, because if you actually am listening to what I'm saying, you actually start thinking about this, you're actually going to see it all over the place, absolutely everywhere, all the time. I can't help it. Anytime I'm like, earlier this week when I was in the Uber going to the Dallas airport, which, you know, it's like one of the biggest airports in the world. It's got like a dedicated train system just to get from terminal to terminal. It's like unimaginably huge. And yet as you're driving up to it, this extremely sophisticated, high-tech, fancy airport, it's like every banister, every, you know, guardrail on the side of the highway is just broken and twisted and kind of fallen over. And every billboard is like half collapsing. And it's just like, you know, this is the type of stuff that it's a signal for what's actually happening. It's a symptom. It's the little skin lesion that doesn't go away that turns out you're riddled with cancer underneath the skin, right? It's these little things that just sort of go by the wayside because you're incapable of dealing with like the big overwhelming things. And again, this might seem small, but like, I just want to remind everyone, like, this is not normal. This was never normal, but it's just become a thing now. And we just cannot have an election where you just know the results. Something happened, you know? I guess you can speculate as to what it was. I guess you can go back to 2000 and talk about the hanging chads. I mean, maybe this has been a condition for longer than you expect if you actually start thinking about it. But it just seems like, you know, 2020 and the mail-in ballots just sort of made elections impossible in this country. You just can't tell who's actually winning. The mail-in ballot results are just completely different than the in-person results, which, like, what is the explanation for that? Why is that the case? It shouldn't be. There's no fundamental difference in, like, the philosophy of people who choose to vote by mail versus go in. Like, why should that be sufficient? You know, it's like, well, you know, 90% of the mail-in ballots were for candidate A, but 90% of the in-person were for candidate B. It doesn't make any sense. You have to have an explanation for that. There has to be a reason for that. My reason for that is because you can cheat with mail-in ballots and there's no way to tell. So it's become incredibly easy. So it's just in my lifetime, we've gone from knowing the results that day, voting on paper. I remember going with my parents and watching them freaking fill it out with a pen, handing it to the person, tabulated like it used to. It was simple. It was clean. People may have had questions, but it got resolved pretty quick. To, it's going to take a week and a half to get results. Even then, the results are going to be inexplicable, just like I explained, with either the mail-in ballots are completely off or they're just totally out of whack with every single poll that was done before and just questionable on the face of it, or just examples of vote totals that are higher than the number of voters registered. And we just accept this, I guess. We just go, oh, this is just the new normal. We're just going backwards. We're just becoming less efficient, less capable, less able to do this stuff. Kind of sucks, but we really shouldn't accept it. Here's the impossible thing that I can't get anybody to do ever. It's not that complicated. Just in a metaphorical sense, if you start in one condition, that's good. And then something happens, and then that condition deteriorates. It gets worse. The voting used to be efficient and fast, and we had results that day, and they weren't exactly all that questionable. Something happened. Now we're in a point where results take forever, and we don't know who wins, and every result is going to be challenged, and every mail-in ballot is potentially falsified, and there's very little way of actually determining who's really casting a vote and for what. Plus, you've got AI now in the mix with AIPAC and these Jewish groups running AI ads showing Thomas Massie on a date with AOC and Ilhan Omar that genuinely convinced old boomers that are unaware of the ability of AI and actually thought that was real footage, something's happened. So you take that middle part and you identify what the thing is that happened, and then you undo that thing. Let me explain it again, okay? Because this goes over, this is a very complicated idea. If you go from a good situation to a bad situation, you identify what the change is and you address or undo that change. If this sounds simple to you, I want to ask, why are we not able to apply this to literally anything else? Like, if you have a pretty low crime rate and then you defund the police and then you have a high crime rate, the solution is not a panopticon with flock cameras on the corner. Like, do you see what I mean? For some reason, we never go, okay, there's been a negative change. Let's look at the cause and then undo the cause. Every time there has to be some new law written or, you know, office created to create a whole new set of problems instead of dealing with the problem that we had. Again, I mean, the whole show is like this. Everything we deal with is like this, which is why I feel like we all feel insane. I feel insane. I feel completely insane because everybody else is genuinely insane. And the cycle I go through is I see stuff like this and I'm like, okay, we got this retarded socialist woman who hates her own son. She's probably getting defeated by the establishment Democrat because the Democrats are probably cheating because they keep cheating and nobody ever, you know, pays the price for it. And I'm kind of like, this is funny. This is just like, you might as well laugh at the absurdity of all of this and how everything is getting worse and nobody seems to notice or be able to identify the causes of that going crazy. And you think it's kind of funny until you read about the late term abortions and you see the videos of the late term abortions being carried out. And it's a reminder that this isn't funny at all. We are literally being driven insane by the most evil people in the entire world so they can do the most abjectly evil things you could ever possibly imagine, like rip apart living babies the minute before they're to be birthed naturally. And it's like, there's a connection here. I think we're in spiritual conflict, at spiritual war. And I think there's a very distinct connection between everybody being utterly insane and not being able to tell the truth and not being able to be competent or straightforward or honest about anything, and just the undercurrent, the bubbling up of this just sickening, seething evil of just the stuff that you see every day, women getting their heads cracked open on the sidewalk and babies being ripped apart by tongs, and just the influx of migrants just grinning, yellow teeth, yellow eyes, just like drawing their fingers across the neck. And it's just like, yeah, there's a connection here. There's obviously a connection here. I mentioned it a little bit on Monday. But as I was doing research last week into just like conspiracy theories as a concept, like you come to some pretty uncomfortable conclusions in that if you look at what their goals seem to be and what the outcome they seem to desire, there are ways to achieve it without being sickeningly evil. So then you see all the sickening evil stuff and you go, this isn't even necessary. They don't need this. It would actually be easier for them to achieve their goals if they weren't like this. So there's something else motivating them. It's not just about power. It's not just about money. It's not just about control. There's something else motivating this. Just like women who think that abortion just like, you know, gives women a choice. Something else is required to kill a 9-month-old.
New grape flavor, bovine colostrum gummies. Yeah, baby. Yeah, these are the best. Support your gut with these grape gummies. Get yours now. The all-new Groovy Grape Bovine Colostrum Gummies have arrived. They're sweet, they're groovy, and they're ready to roll. Don't miss out. Get yours today. Oh, yeah, baby. The globalists are poisoning your family. Fight back with superfood gummies, vitamins, powerhouse probiotics, plus an organic fruit and veggie blast. For the resistance, get them now.
Now that's how you stick it to the globalists. Tastes like pure victory, baby! TheAlexJonesStore.com.
We have to fight for our sovereignty. We have to fight to protect, again, what God gave us, which, I mean, our health is one of the biggest things. We're all at this point middle-aged. We're trying to have families. And I think with the transhumanist agenda, there is a little bit of a psyop afoot. Where,
oh, I've said that. But the other day when I had you guys coming on, I said, we're doing something about what we can take control of. Mm. And then the last few years, Joe Rogan, one time at dinner, goes, about 3 years ago, you're fat. Your own enemy. He does that to guests. He was like to Theo Vaughn, too. Get off that Prozac, you idiot. And people were mad at him. That's tough love Joe does. And he's there with Sean Johnson, the Navy SEAL guy that I'd known for years, but didn't really really friends. Sean goes, fine, I'll train you. I'll meet you every morning. And I said, all right, let's do it. And then I lost like 70 pounds, and I kind of halfway cut back and gave back 10, but now I'm back to where I was. I'm going to go even lower. But the whole point is that Joe goes, you know, you're your own worst enemy. You think the globalists are going to kill you. You're killing yourself. And so that's where Masterpiece comes in. That's where doing all this comes in. I mean, this is real, folks. Methylene blue works. Bovine colostrum works. This, you'll get Masterpiece.com. The Masterpiece is unbelievable.
We are at a crossroads with the survival of the human species. And the people that have all the resources and all have spelled that out very clearly to us. And the things that they are putting inside of our body to complete that mission. You got to get out. The fact of the matter is, zeolite, which is one of the main ingredients of Masterpiece, has been proven in all ways to remove every toxin that it's looked at grabbing. It performs. That's why it's called the Master Binder.
But yours is different.
It's completely different.
Because it doesn't just pull stuff. It brings in the key sea minerals.
Yes, absolutely. So any way that you would actually test Masterpiece out, which would be like its pH, its molecular composition, its molecular ratio, if it's isotonic and whatnot, it is identical to blood plasma. You're talking about marine plasma, sea plasma, minerals. It is the same molecular composition as your blood profile. And so why does that matter? Blood is life. When you are grabbing the problem with our bodies, with the toxins in there, which is disrupting how our bodies perform on every level, it's literally made our bodies mineral deficient. Toxins take the place of minerals. So when the Masterpiece is carrying in minerals, when it takes a toxin, it's giving the perfect minerals right there at that time. That's why everyone that looks at the testing, whether it's our hair tissue mineral analysis practitioners, our blood testers, which we've done three different independent third-party labs doing different blood testing, they've never seen results like
that. Yeah, so regular zeolite just pulls out bad stuff but doesn't replace it. This is zeolite with a good thing, pulls out bad, it goes bloop, good.
Yeah. Our bodies are magical if you get the poisons out.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Who took the bomb?
Back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room, reporting on the leftist takeover of America that is happening. Just once again, our victory in the election of 2024 didn't really mean anything. Like, would have been nice to see some major aggressive movements in the first half of Trump's administration. It's not going to be happening in the second half. And if these midterm results are any indication, it's going to be a very difficult 2.5 years moving forward for the Republican Party. We're going to talk to Brandon Straka of the Walkaway Movement about what that means and what the Republicans can do to try to win back some support, because we need them to actually be a effective bulwark against the rising tide of communism, which is like the most dangerous threat we've ever faced at this point. Especially the way that things are going. I got so many videos to illustrate all this. Let's go to clip 35 first. In the third worldification of our cities, we now have Zoran Mamdani, the mayor, and I've never liked this. I always think this is such a ridiculous charade. when the mayor or the president or somebody is out actually doing physical labor. We've got like the congressman or the senator in their little orange vest picking up trash on the side of the road. Like, I do it too. I get in here and get to work. And it's like, we don't need you. You're a billionaire. Why don't you hire 10,000 people to do this instead of do a little game? The crew just asked like McDonald's. That was different. That was different because that was Trump just having fun. That was Trump mocking Kamala Harris because Kamala Harris was caught lying about working at McDonald's. And so Trump went to work at McDonald's as a big goof, as a big joke. That I like. This I'm down with. What I don't like is the performance, like when Donald Rumsfeld on September 11th is out there clearing rubble from the Pentagon. And it's like, yeah, you have better things to be doing, sir. Actually, you are like the highest level of our military strategy in America. You need to actually be strategizing and communicating and coordinating with the, you know, parts of the government that are taking care of this. We don't need you doing manual labor right now, sir. So I've never liked that. Look, I'm telling the crew right now, you either got to hook your mic up so it's going out live, or you got to stop saying things to me because I can't. You got to just hook yourself. I want you just to hook yourself up so people can actually hear you, which I've been asking for. And I'd like that to be the case. So we've got Zoran Mamdani, czar of New York, out here fixing a water fountain, I guess, in this stupid publicity stunt, which, as a shredded nerd on X says, in an actual functional society, you can just expect things to work. One guy turns up to fix something as soon as it breaks. Having five dudes and the mayor turn up for a Photoshop is actually how the third world operates, which is exactly right. Let's go to clip 35 now. So here we go. Yeah, looks like a government job to me. Five guys not exactly suited for the work, trying to figure out how to do it. Got the manager there observing it all. And Zoran Mamdani himself, look at that. He's such a normal guy, just like you and me. You know, he's just another Nepo baby Ugandan prince like you and I, doing the physical labor that we've all done all our lives. Let's see, how good is he at doing this? Yeah, and he's in a suit. Of course. I wish we had a better angle. I feel like that was a strategic angle. And I feel like this is an important, I mean, you know, might seem trivial to some people, but like you really can tell a lot about people by how they turn a wrench or swing a hammer. You know what I mean? You ever see Dave Portnoy try to swing a hammer? Dude's clearly never done it in his life. It's hilarious. Or like whoever the guy was. I mean, just like presidents often fall into this trap. They like try to look manly by doing something like this, but they're just like, my hammer's broken or something. Nail's not going in. It's like, yeah, dude's never actually done any physical labor. I seriously doubt Zoran Mamdani's ever actually done physical labor. I think it matters personally. And again, we don't need to belabor the point, but when everything is going fine, you can then focus on the little details. You can then do the things that are optional, right? I always think back. I cannot help it. I'm sure if you've listened to the show, you've heard me say it before, but there was like a 10-second period that just runs through my mind like a cycle when I was in Japan and I saw a city worker, literally the man was on his hands and knees with like a toothbrush type object, scrubbing a single tile in the subway. You know why he was doing that? Because every other surface was clean. Everything else was fine. There were no pipes leaking to be fixed. There were no alarms going off. There was no graffiti on the wall. So when you look around, you go, well, gee, everything is perfect, but there is a scuff on that tile there. I guess I'll do that. I guess since everything else is wonderful, I guess I'll focus on like the little details. And once that done, maybe I'll just like beautify things up a little bit. And you just think about the wasted energy, the wasted effort, the wasted time our society spends on babysitting third world barbarians that we're letting out of prison for the 100th time. Just $10,000 for a lawyer, holding him overnight. We got to provide him all this crap. And it's just like, how much stuff is going by the wayside because we're scrambling and playing catch up and just trying to fulfill the basic functions of government with a bunch of people who are just impossible burdens to deal with, provide nothing, and just cause a bunch of problems, which means everything else starts to collapse around us and people don't even really notice. Like, it'd be interesting just to go around, because it would be too much, right? Just from like my house to the studio, the drive, if I were to film everything that was wrong, everything that was just like, if you had a magic wand, the graffiti on the walls, the curbs that are chipped, the giant potholes everybody's got to swerve around to avoid, the blinking red lights because there's something wrong with the signal system. I mean, I could probably film 1,000 things between, you know, in the 1 mile between my house and the studio. And it's like, it doesn't need to be this way. We don't need to live like this. And this doesn't just happen. All these things we build that just we allow to fall apart. We can maintain them. We just have to have time and energy and money to do it. And unfortunately, right now, we're spending all of that time and money on everything that doesn't matter. But let's get to the specifics here. Far left trans kids enthusiast Peggy Flanagan wins Minnesota U.S. Senate Democrat primary. Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, a progressive Democrat who previously wore a Protect Trans Kids shirt featuring a tactical knife and praised Democrats for voting against the Laken Riley Act, has won the Democrat primary for Minnesota's open U.S. Senate seat. Flanagan defeated Representative Angie Craig on Tuesday, marking another victory for the far left wing of the Democratic Party. She was backed by progressive Senator Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, as well as retiring Senator Tina Smith. Flanagan, a supporter of transgender activism, previously faced criticism over a photo showing her wearing a shirt bearing the words Protect Trans Kids alongside an image of a tactical knife. The image resurfaced amid scrutiny of a transgender activist merchandise featuring slogans alongside guns, knives, and other weapons. Other merchandise included the phrase such as trans rights or else alongside images of firearms. And unless I'm mistaken, I believe she was also one of the figures that, you know, was conspiring with other secretaries of state to rig the election against Donald Trump. I mean, she routinely appears in like the most embarrassing crap from the Democrats, including the images you just saw with Protect Trans Kids, because, you know, she's a progressive who's standing up against the patriarchy, obviously, who is outraged at the latent racism and misogyny in our culture, the Western American culture, but she is happy to voluntarily put on a hood not to offend the genuinely misogynistic culture of the Muslims, because these people don't actually believe anything. So there's that. And again, when Trump got elected and it was like, woke is dead and, you know, we won the culture war. And it's like, except DEI is still in place absolutely everywhere. The hiring practices that deliberately excluded white people in blatant contradiction to the, you know, equal rights clauses of the Civil Rights Act going completely unpunished. They're still actually seemingly maximizing their abortion push, doing things that they themselves even recognize and say are completely ridiculous and unnecessary. This is why it's sort of exhausting to talk about all of this. It's because, like, you can literally say to them, like, I'm against full-term abortion. And they will call you a conspiracist and be like, you are an idiot. Nobody wants that. Nobody is trying to do that, because they get it, because they know. They understand. A late-term abortion is just killing a baby. It's just killing a baby. It is absolutely no different. Fundamentally, physically, metaphysically, it is absolutely no different than killing a living baby. When you're killing a baby at 30-something weeks, you're killing a living child that could very easily survive outside of the womb. When you're talking about up to the moment of birth abortions, a woman can be in contractions about to give birth, and they will use metal tools to rip the baby apart piece by piece. It's so sick. It's so disgusting. And the Democrats know this. And so they will sit there and they will pass a law to allow full-term abortions while simultaneously claiming that nobody wants full-term abortions and that it's ridiculous to suggest that. This is where I'm just like, what do we do? Because I'm done. I don't want to talk about this anymore. We don't need to talk about it anymore. There's no debate, okay? If they had stayed in the realm of rare, safe, and whatever that they used to say, when they acknowledged that abortion was bad, but they still made the argument that it's a woman's choice and up to a certain point, the baby is not viable on its own, so therefore, they actually used to make that argument. The fact that they are now not just pushing for, but are passing laws for late-term abortion, I think it's time to end the conversation. This is a 34-week baby outside the womb. And by the way, with the technology now, they have babies surviving at like 23 weeks, 22 weeks. I mean, I honestly don't even want to show you some of the videos because they are so genuinely horrifying. The tearing apart of, you know, literally tearing apart children while they are fighting back and trying to survive. It is beyond horrifying, but they celebrate this. They're happy about this. Now, of course, now they're happy about this. If you were to ask them 2 years ago about whether they would want late-term abortion, they respond in the same way that every human being would respond. Here's another 34-week old baby. This baby, if it was in a different location, could be murdered in Massachusetts under their current law. But when Kamala Harris was running for president, she was asked about this, and her answer tells you everything you need to know. And again, I marvel at the ability of the media to transform people's minds. Yeah, a fully formed fetus in the womb is not a baby, but a man in a dress is a woman. Yeah, I mean, there's no logic to this. There's no explanation that suffices. And they even know this. Which, I mean, again, it's all just insane. Let's go to clip number 12 here. This is Kamala Harris being asked about late-term abortion when she was running for president in 2024. Let's watch.
They say that allows Democrats to perform abortions up until, you know, birth, which is ridiculous, which is not accurate.
And it's ridiculous, and it's a mischaracterization of the point. No, the point is, the point is, I am being precise. We need to put into law the protections of Roe versus Wade. And that is about going back to where we were before the Dobbs decision.
But if there is the possibility through legislation to provide any kind of guarantee at the federal level, any kind of protection, like the Republican proposal of 15 weeks, protection.
The Republicans are also members of the Republican Party are also proposing a national ban. The thing that
I'm talking about, the Lindsey Graham bill, as you know, and those proposals of giving some access, though that's 15 weeks. Why do you think it shouldn't be specific? You know, out in New Mexico, for example, the governor there says it shouldn't be nailed down to a week because it should be a private matter between a woman and her doctor. There shouldn't be a precise number put on that. Is that what you believe as well?
I believe that we should put the protections of Roe v. Wade into law in the way that.
So again, what about abortion up till birth? Absolutely not. No way. That's ridiculous. That's one of these crazy things that the Republicans come up with to scare people because they're evil. Only now, that was 2 years ago. That was 2024. Now there are 10 states that do allow up to the moment of birth abortions. So again, what do you do about people like this? I can bring up the classic example of like vaccine passports, right? When we first said in early 2020, hey, they're going to set us up for vaccine passports, the reaction was the same as you saw there from Vice News and every leftist outlet. Vaccine passports, that's insane. That's crazy. There's no way. Because they get it. Because they understand. Because when they first hear it, they can't help but have the human reaction that goes, oh my God, no, absolutely not. That would be horrifying. And then something happens. I don't know what goes on in their minds. I don't know what twisted contortions happens in their souls. But 6 months later, they think you deserve to like die if you don't agree with vaccine passports. Same thing with abortion. Somehow it goes from late term abortion up to the moment of birth. That's disgusting. That's sick. We would never. To now, you hate women if you don't want to allow this. What are you supposed to do with people like this? They're unmoored. They're unworthy of consideration. Let's go to clip 3 here. Blue state Massachusetts just legalized abortion up to birth. Here's the governor signing the law, the lesbian governor signing it into law, surrounded by a bunch of shrieking harpies clapping and giggling at the fact that they can now literally murder babies. Let's watch.
Thank you.
They did it. Wow. Congratulations. So why, I mean, why do they want this? That's the question. Why would they want this? This obviously has nothing to do with, like, women don't know they're pregnant until later, because that would be an argument that people would make if you say, well, you know, abortion has to be by 6 weeks. They would say, well, by 6 weeks, a lot of women don't even know they're pregnant. So that's kind of unfair that the woman, by the time she realizes she's pregnant, it's too late for the abortion. It's got to be a little bit later than that. But there's no excuse. You're not carrying around a baby for 8.5 months, not knowing it, and then suddenly realizing and being like, oh no, I got to get into, no. So that's not happening, obviously. What type of person, imagine the woman that carries a living baby in her belly for 9 months and then has it sucked out through a vacuum tube and dismembered. You ever met a pregnant woman? It's not exactly a, you know, tumor they're carrying around. It is a living being. You can see their little footprints. You can interact with them. They have, like, their favorite music. They'll start dancing if you play certain things. Like, they are living beings. Imagine the type of person that feels a living being moving around their body for 8.5 months and then kills it, because those people exist and this law was just passed for them and them alone. So there are a couple things that are motivating this. None of them have to do with women's health. None of them have to do with freedom of association or freedom of choice or women's empowerment. They're as sickeningly evil as you can possibly imagine. The only one you could ever possibly justify in any way, however of a stretch it is, and like I'm saying this to make a point, is you can sell the body parts. You can sell the body parts. So a liver or an arm or a leg or an eyeball from a baby that's 9 months is going to be a lot more valuable than a fetus that's 6 months. So if you let them gestate until they're basically human, then you've sort of found a workaround of the fact that it's illegal to sell human body parts from human beings. So you just do it right before they're born. They cross that legal threshold to become a real human being. Then you can sell their body parts legally. That's the only, like, rational explanation I could possibly come to as to why you would want, or why you would pass abortion up till birth. If you want to speculate a little bit less rationally, it probably has something to do with just the spiritual death it's causing. The horror itself is the point. Again, I don't exactly revel in showing you this stuff, but we can take a look at clip 27 here from Lila Grace Rose. This is a baby at 34 weeks. Unborn children this age are now dehumanized in Massachusetts and legally allowed to be slaughtered via abortion. Let's go ahead and roll that video.
And when was your due date?
And it was July, but this baby getting ready to come up out of here.
34 weeks. 29 here, another 34-week-old, looks like. Massachusetts just eliminated restrictions on abortions after 24 weeks, calling the ban arbitrary and harmful. Again, babies can survive at 22 weeks now. I have nephews and nieces that were born significantly before 34 weeks. Perfectly happy, perfectly healthy now. No problem at all. This is what they look like in the womb. And again, I don't know if you can tell, I'm kind of hesitating even getting to this next video. Viewer discretion advised. But this is what they legalized in Massachusetts. This is what they actually are now doing as a matter of course, legally in Massachusetts. Clip number 28. This is an abortion that was filmed. So you're actually seeing sort of a, you know, X-ray vision of the fetus literally trying to fight for its life and scramble to get away from the metal tools that are seeking it out, grabbing it and ripping it apart. This is the whole process of an induced abortion with ultrasound. And yeah, you can physically see it. Was that clip 28? Cause there's a longer one as well. I don't even know if I want to play it, but there are long ones you can find. And so the question is, like, how did we get to this point? Like, what the hell is wrong with us? How did we get to this point? Why is everyone so utterly insane now to allow this type of crap? It genuinely is sickening. And I guess at a certain point, I just have to, like, take solace in just being like, I don't know. I don't even know. Everyone's retarded and evil. Is that even taking solace? Am I taking solace in something by saying, no, I'm pretty sure everyone's just retarded and evil, and that's like the only valid explanation I can come to? Of course, the good news is I have plenty of evidence for that claim that we can get to in just a little bit. But like, this isn't a joke. It feels like politics are just something else now. This isn't about, like, where do we think our tax money should go? And I think we should build a new football field, but they think the high school needs a new gymnasium. And it's like, now it's like, okay, our government is hyperactively, hyper-focused on just, like, selling out our birthright. Our entire relationship with our government is that between the abuser and the victim. We're just constantly having to organize and petition and beg, just please stop destroying us. Just stop deliberately ruining our lives. Stop ruining our neighborhoods. Stop selling out our birthright. Stop degrading the quality of life. Just please, for the love of God, just stop attacking us. And of course, they don't. It doesn't even work when we beg them. Or just like doing stuff like this, where they're literally patting each other on the back and clapping and high-fiving because they just allowed babies to be ripped apart piece by piece with metal tongs because the mom decided not to get an abortion for the 9 months that she could have. But it's the golden age, right? But it's the golden age, and hey, at least now we control the Strait of Hormuz, don't we? Apparently. That's what Trump says. So, you know, take solace in that. Nah, folks, we're losing, and we need to stop losing.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you, Meta, Facebook is watching you, Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when. Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, has been very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
I basically wrote a very large book that got divided into two books by my publisher about Epstein and the intelligence connections. And so basically what I argue about is that there's this transnational group that Epstein was part of, but he wasn't the head of it. He's like middle management in it at best. And that these people exert influences over many governments, and they are not really overseen by any national government, nor really loyal to any of them. And that they're, basically the one of the, you know, de facto ways, our world is actually governed, as opposed to the public governments, that we all know, which are, have basically been reduced to enabling environments for the policies made by these other people that are then filtered down through think tanks or philanthropic foundations. Think the Gates Foundation, for example. And so, like, if you look at Epstein, as a microcosm of this, like, he was setting up a lot of these philanthropic foundations that influence policy. He was doing a lot of shady financial stuff, helping powerful people hide their taxes so they don't have to pay it. He was money laundering. And so a lot of these things don't get prosecuted when they're done by very powerful people in the United States. And it's interesting, too, that one of the funds that Epstein was involved setting up was actually handling money for our current Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent. And he refuses to release Epstein's treasury records, even though Congressman Ron Wyden asked that they do so, and he introduced the Released Epstein Treasury Records Act to Congress. Haven't heard very much about that lately, but I really hope it passes, because people deserve to see what was going on there, but I have a feeling it won't. These oligarchs that people like Epstein front for are not accustomed to ever being held accountable for anything. So Wexner is a good example of that, but I don't think it's exclusive, to him. And so, a key actor in this network, testified to Congress in the early 70s, about what was going on with this group. And I think he really gave it away, but like, just, they didn't care. It's really brazen, frankly. It's Samuel Pisar, who was a lawyer. He's best known now as Anthony Blinken's stepfather, but he was Robert Maxwell's lawyer and very close friend, and involved with basically what he said was building up commerce relations between the Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc during the Cold War. And basically what he argued in the early 70s to Congress is that what was happening was the creation of a trans-ideological corporation that was becoming the de facto power in the world, making the nation state irrelevant. So what he meant by trans-ideological corporation is that it was capitalist Western multinational corporations entering into joint venture with communist state-owned corporations, and that these forces were essentially joining hands and creating a structure of governance that was really running the world, of economic governance. So you see it back then in the early 70s being told to Congress, we're making a sovereign corporation, a SovCorp, that runs everything. And it doesn't matter what national governments do. National governments bow to us. And so I would argue that that's what Epstein was really working for. And I think if you look at intelligence agencies, let's take the CIA, for example, they serve those same masters. The CIA is not the top of the food chain. So, for example, if you look at the early coups of the CIA, who were they for? Well, in Iran in 1954, it was for Anglo-American Oil. In Guatemala, it was for United Fruit Company. The list goes on and on of all the U.S. corporations or multinational corporations that led our intelligence services to, you know, finance and foment, coup d'etats in foreign countries. Yeah,
the CIA is basically economic hitmen. Would that be?
Well, I think they have many purposes beyond that, but that's absolutely one of them. And they also do regime change operations.
Yes.
And a litany of other bad things So,
but the regime chains are almost always at the
behest of corporations. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Because what we're really talking about are the oligarchs. They're the ones really in charge. And, you know, intelligence agencies work for them.
Ladies and gentlemen, Big Lee has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with minbenazidil, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenazidil is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenazidil studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined in studio now by the one and only Brandon Straka. And you know what? I came down here. I don't even have anything about you, how people find you and everything. Of course, people know you from the Walk Away movement. We just had a fantastic time in Dallas doing debates.
Yeah.
I did a debate. Alex did a debate. 3-on-3, or 4-on-4, I guess, for ours. So excited for these to come out. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. And you know, I've been banned on everything anyway, so I don't have any socials anyway, so don't worry about it.
No, you do. You're on X, right?
No, I do. Yeah. No. After J6, Walkaway got banned from Facebook, but actually after more than 5 years of intense litigation, I think I'll have some very exciting news about the Walkaway campaign very soon.
That's very exciting.
Not necessarily today, but very soon. And yeah, I'm on everything. I did just launch a podcast, so I hope people will take a look at that on YouTube and Rumble at the Brandon Straka channel on YouTube and Rumble.
Well, I have been every time we've done a debate, very impressed by your organizational capabilities. I mean, the studios always look amazing. And what I thought was really special about this, about what happened over the weekend, was it was this event that brought people together. You know, I would say it's like Twitter come to life. It's all these, you know, great people that we interact with online, sometimes not in a very friendly way, but just getting together and getting to hang out and see each other in person. And we did the debate and it got a little contentious, but at the end of the day, we're cracking each other up on the Uber ride home. And it's just a really unique circumstance, because any other time that I've been in a situation like that, it's usually at CPAC or a TPUSA event and there's crowds and there's all this. But here it was just, since there was no audience for the debates, it's just sort of the content creators, the influencers, whatever you want to call them. We just got to sit around and sort of chew the fat for a while. And it's a very unique opportunity that really, I think, genuinely fosters some unity on the right in a way that we're really lacking.
So interesting you should say that, because as the weekend was wrapping, and just so your audience understands, basically Walkaway flew out about 30 influencers, 30, to shoot over the course of 36 hours what ended up being 5 different debates. It was supposed to be 4. But we ended up doing kind of an impromptu, I don't want to call it a debate. I want to call it a roundtable discussion about Charlie Kirk's murder.
Right.
The closest it came to debate was, I think, that we talked about the way in which the conversation about Charlie Kirk's murder is being handled by certain different. So I just want people to understand, we weren't sitting around saying like, well, what really happened to Charlie? It wasn't like that. It was more like, how is this productive,
mm-hmm.
the way that the different sides are presenting their theories about what happened to Charlie. And anyway, when the weekend wrapped, I said to my team, you know, if I had realized the way that this was going to feel and how this all went down, I would have made it into a conference and actually invited people to come and attend, and you know, and made it actually a little bit bigger. And I think we should do that in the future.
Yeah, no, I think we should. And so what is the secret to getting all these people to the same place? Because, you know, as much as I really try, genuinely try not to, you know, contribute to the division on the right, but it's hard not to. And, you know, things get heated, especially on Twitter, where you always read things in the most unfriendly way.
Yeah.
So how do you bring all these people together? How do you in particular do it?
Well, so one little advantage is that typically the right is a little bit better than the left at showing up to defend their position. Now, I will say I've been a little tiny bit disappointed in some of the MAGA influencers who talk mad. Can I swear on your show?
No, okay. We're on the radio.
Who talk mad crap.
Trash, yes.
Yeah. On X. And then we're saying, well, just show up and say the same thing you're saying on X, but just say it to the person's face across from you. And a lot of them don't want to. But as you saw, a lot of them did,
yeah.
You know, we had at least what 16 or so people show up to represent the MAGA side. So number one, there's a little bit more of a willing spirit to show up and defend their position. But number two, it's very difficult, actually to kind of jigger everybody's schedules. Like that's actually the hardest part. This right. one can come on this day, but this one can't come on this day and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
But there's still a willingness to go.
There's a willingness to go. And I would also say, and I'm going to pat my team on the back right now, when I say that, and maybe even myself a little bit. Walkaway goes out of our way to treat people with a lot of kindness and respect and dignity and stuff. So, and we even do that with the left. Like when we've done events where the left shows up to debate, no one gets a cold shoulder. No one gets, you know, we put people up at a nice location. We try to provide transportation. Everyone gets treated with a white glove treat, you know, because it's like, even if it was somebody who I was just completely ideologically opposed to, I want everyone who participates in anything we do to leave saying I had a great experience with Walkaway. And yep. I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah. And like I said, it is a great experience. And obviously you put a lot of work into it and a lot of hard work. When can people expect to see these debates come out? What's the timeline?
Okay. So like I said, we ended up doing five. It was supposed to be four, but the Charlie Kirk thing was a little bit impromptu. So we're trying to actually prioritize. We would like to get that out within a week. So I think there's a strong likelihood that the Charlie Kirk roundtable people will be seeing that within 7 days and hopefully closer to five. The next one that's going to come out is going to be MAGA versus America First. And we did two of those. So one of the ones that we did was with this guy. I don't know. His name's Alex Jones. I don't know if you've heard of him.
He's a gay frogs guy.
Right. Yeah. But he's not a gay frog himself.
Right. Right. But he does. Yeah.
That's right. But he talks a lot about gay frogs.
I've heard a thing or two.
Yeah. And he's made some predictions about gay frogs, I think.
Yes.
He was involved. So, it was MAGA versus America First. And on the America First side, we had Alex Jones, Joe Kent, Joel Webbin and Kai Schwimmer, who was incredible. Did you know Kai Schwimmer?
Oh, yeah, of course. He's great.
Well, see, I didn't know him that well, and I was blown away, super impressed by how talented he is. And in fact, I called him the next day and I said, I want to work with you a lot more. You're awesome.
Yeah, he's very awesome. And then on the other side, it was heavy hitters also, Andrew Wilson, John Doyle, Will Chamberlain.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're doing this because we did so many. I was panicking. I was like, oh my God, am I going to remember who was on the other side?
I know. Well, I was doing that same thing when we first got back. I was like, I'm going to, you know, say, oh, it was a great meeting. This person. I went, I cannot remember all of them. So I better just not say any of them or someone's going to be mad. I leave them out. But everybody there was great.
So you named everyone except for one. Andrew Wilson, John Doyle, Gerald Wilson,
that's right.
Who was the other one that I think you just said? It doesn't matter. It does matter.
Will Chamberlain, John Doyle, Andrew.
Will Chamberlain. Yeah. Will Chamberlain. That's it. So that was the first one. I really enjoy doing yours. You actually did two, so we also did another MAGA versus America First. And amazing people on that one as well. Chase Geyser, you, Viva Fry,
Alex Stein,
some really great people on the other side, David Pollack, Tommy Sotomayor,
Rob Noer,
yeah, that's it, and Mikhail,
that's right,
I'm gonna blank on his last name right now, but one thing that I thought was really cool is you actually participated in two. Mm-hmm. The other one that we did was a conspiracy theories debate. I'm smiling because you were just saying a second ago about there being almost like a little bit of a fraternal feel, you know, to the couple of days that we shot. That's what was so nice, I thought, about the conspiracies debate, because we actually, you know, doubled up on some of the people from MAGA versus America First, including having, you know, opposition. But basically, the conspiracies debate was almost like a game show style.
Yeah.
Kind of like round,
a little more lighthearted.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was funny. I thought my jokes were funny. I don't know if my jokes were funny, but, you know, we did it kind of like a Halloween themed, like very tongue in cheek. And that one will be coming out closer to Halloween, probably in October, but Alex's will come out first. And that's going to be probably by August 31st. And then we'll do the next two in, September, and then conspiracy theories in time for Halloween.
I'm very excited to see all of them. It was very fun participating in all of them. I agree. I thought our debate about America First versus MAGA was very substantive and very,
very.
Everybody's arguing in good faith, which I think is the big difference, because that's what you see with the left is they're just not arguing in good faith. They're either saying things they don't believe or they're just being snide and trying to win points. And maybe there are some leftists out there that can argue in good faith, but you don't see it very much. And with our opponents, even if we disagreed with them, we actually agreed on a lot of stuff. You could just tell that they were genuinely trying to convince us of their genuine position, which was nice. Just final question about this, because I didn't want to get on to really want to ask you about some other debates coming up that should be pretty exciting. But what did anything surprise you? Did anything really stand out as something totally unexpected that somebody said or a position somebody took or the vibe was unexpected in any way?
Well, I'm going to say a positive thing and a negative thing. I'll start with the negative so I can end on a positive. Okay, so one thing I noticed between this round of debates and the ones, because you were a part of the first round, which, did we shoot those in May or June?
Boomers versus millennials. Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah. I think we shot that maybe in May. March? It was during CPAC.
Earlier this year.
Oh my
yeah.
God. Yeah. I think we shot that in March. That's unbelievable. Yeah. Because it was during CPAC Dallas. So one thing that I've noticed has changed in my opinion is that the side representing MAGA, part of their messaging to me has gotten a little more desperate because now I'm hearing a lot more of like, you know, the midterms are just around the corner and, you know, we got to get out and we got to vote for Republicans because Republicans are better than Democrats. They're better than Democrats. You went to, like before there was a little bit more of like swagger behind their message.
Don't
just
be panicking,
like you guys are panicking. Yeah. You guys are doomers. You guys are whatever. And now it's like, oh my God. Oh my God. You still got to come out and vote and you got to vote for Republicans because they're better than Democrats. And I'm like, this, you guys are panicking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I saw that.
And I think I made that point during the debate is, you know, before it was all, well, be patient. Things are happening. It's behind the scenes. Don't be so rough. Don't be a panicking. We got plenty of time. And now, you know, they didn't listen to us then. And now it's, well, it's too late. We don't have time. You know, we don't have time to do this. We got to do the midterms. You got to focus on this right now. A little bit frustrating. Okay. So that's the negative. But I agree. I see a certain, element of franticness, you know, seeping into the GOP's messaging.
Yeah.
What was the positive thing?
The positive thing was that, particularly in your America versus America First. Of all the debates that we've done going back to March when we did the first series, I felt more during that debate than I ever have this feeling that we are in fact on the same side.
Mm.
The first debates that we did, including the ones that we did in Orlando, that you weren't in that one, but it was a different group, and that got really nasty. There was even a couple of girls, and there was almost like a fist fight at one point. And it felt like we were so divided at that point that we might as well be right versus left.
Right.
Like it felt that divided. This time it felt more like we're a family having a significant falling out, but that we actually do want to be together again.
Yeah.
I think we do actually want to come back together.
We certainly both want the same goals, which I noticed that too, that it's like, no, I want to defeat the Democrats. No, I want to defeat the Democrats.
Right.
It's like,
wait,
we're on the same side.
We are.
We yelling at each other. But it's about difference of tactic, difference of sort of where this ultimately goes, right? Where this movement goes, what, you know, we're actually trying to achieve whether we have time to wait or not. I mean, it's really more about tactics and strategy than ultimate end goal, which we do actually agree on.
That's right. Yeah. And so, that's the thing too, is it's so weird. There are so many people on the right who their mentality seems to be, wait, you're second guessing Trump. You're questioning Trump. So you're a Democrat now.
Right.
That's literally like, that's where it goes. And it's like, no, there are many ways to be a Republican, or there's many ways to express, you know, my conservative values. Like you can be a conservative and not be behind Trump. You know, I mean, anyone can do that. So I think it's important for people to remember, like, You know, and it's not about like, we all want Trump to succeed. Like we all, like we want to be behind him, but, he's changed.
Yeah. Well, and this of course goes back to your entry into politics with the walkaway movement and what you sort of realized about the Democratic Party and how they were not free thinkers and they did not accept, you know, people with different, alternative visions. Like,
right.
We are the side that allows for, this type of dissension, that allows for questioning things.
Well, we used to.
I know, and this is part of the, it must be weird for you sort of seeing the Republican side now saying stop asking questions, you know, fold into line.
Weird is a very nice word. I mean, honestly, right. it's at times been devastating. I mean, truly devastating because, when I left the left, and I need people to understand the cost that comes with that. I mean, I lost like 90% of my friends.
Sure.
Lost my entire life that I used to know. I lost family members. And I walked into uncertainty when I left the left. Now, thankfully, I was only in that place of uncertainty for a very brief period of time. I put out, you know, this video, in 2018 talking about all the reasons I was walking away. And I wanted this idea for this movement to be successful, for Walkaway to be successful. But I didn't know for sure. You never know for sure if something's going to hit on social media. Turns out it did. Thank God. And I ended up with this like groundswell of support from this movement of people who said, you know, welcome home. You've found the place where you can, we can agree to disagree. We can be civil, the civil discourse. We're not a cult. You know, we can have a broad spectrum of ideas. We can disagree without being disagreeable, all these different things. And I was like, this is what I wanted. This is amazing. And somehow now this side that I'm on, it's like a mind virus or something. Yeah. It has become exactly like the left that I walked away from. Exactly. Not a little bit, exactly like the left that I walked away from.
Yeah. And it's untenable. I mean, you cannot arrive at the right, you know, position if you aren't having open dialogue and conversation about it. So yeah, it's been very disheartening to see the way this has gone, especially with the war in Iran and everything. But the debates were fantastic, and I genuinely cannot wait for them to come out. They're going to come out on all of Walkaway's social medias and everything, right? So what do people follow so they see it as soon as it comes out?
Sure. So, if you're like a Rumble person, and that's, I would encourage you to follow the Walkaway campaign, Rumble account. Also follow, please, my Rumble account, Brandon Strzok, so you can, see I've launched a new show recently and putting episodes out once a week on Mondays. We're not very big on Rumble. We haven't pushed it that hard. But we do pretty well on YouTube. So YouTube Walkaway campaign, I think we have 270,000 subs or something. Not too bad. And also the Brandon Strzok channel on YouTube, where people can see episodes of my new show. But so we'll be putting out the entirety of them on YouTube and Rumble. And then, of course, people will see lots of clips and stuff on X. And honestly,
there's going to be a lot of highlights. I can say that right now.
And maybe we'll even rethink our distribution strategy, honestly. I mean, there's a chance maybe we'll release the whole thing on X as well.
Yeah.
Possibly.
They'll
definitely see clips.
I think that's a great idea. So the like biggest news on X today is the anticipation about the Andrew Wilson-Candace debate. To be perfectly honest, I do not give a damn about this debate. I think this is so pointless. I don't know if you saw the Stu Peters, Andrew Wilson debate about the same topic. Literally the whole thing is, you make a claim. No, you make a claim. I won't make a claim. You make a claim. And it's just, this whole thing has become a circus to me. I think the whole thing's ridiculous. What's your prediction? What are your thoughts on the upcoming, you know, storied Andrew Wilson versus Candace Owens? Will this finally solve things once and for all? I'm sure.
No. No. And also, okay, you know, I'm not really much of a conspiracy guy. I hosted the conspiracy debate for fun, but like, I actually don't really buy into many conspiracy theories at all. But do you want to hear the craziest conspiracy theory?
Yeah, let me have it.
Possibly. I am sometimes questioning if Erica Kirk and Candace Owens are calling each other every night and laughing, but oh, you've thought of this too?
I've thought of the same thing.
You have?
Well, because there are some things that happen, you just go, what? I mean, I don't even want to get into it, but there's some things Erica Kirk does that I'm just like, are you trying to give them fodder? Are you trying to give them something to harp on for the next 2 years? Because what are you doing? I've thought this exact same
thing. Well, I'm only presenting it for different reasons, actually.
Okay.
And by the way, I'm saying this tongue in cheek, right? Like, there's like 2% of me. Yeah, I'm just throwing something out there because we're having a conversation.
This is what's all about.
But, you know, I think to myself, every time Candace attacks Turning Point, I have to imagine they're raising a boatload of money, like, because people feel sorry for them, and especially they feel sorry for Erica. So they're going to, when they, people feel sorry for people, they send them money. Candace has always benefited from Turning Point raking in a ton of money. Now, I'm going to try to keep myself in check here, but like, for those of us who have been in this movement for a long time and know the chatter behind the scenes and like what's really going on, people knew very well that Charlie and Candace had a falling out. Like, that was well established. I mean, despite what she's trying to present now, like, they were not close friends at the end. That's just not true. And, but yet she can, you know, people are like, well, how could that be? She was speaking at Turning Point events up until the end. Well, I think it's, she was a cash cow for them. Like, sure. You know, she pretty black woman who says, oh, you know, black people are on a plantation and, you know, white Christians love to, oh my God, let's throw money at the black
woman. She's good at what she does. I mean, yes. You can't take that away from her.
Yes. And so when she started participating in their stuff, like, their profile raised tremendously, and they raised a ton of money off of her. And my belief, I don't know that I can prove it, is that when a personal falling out started to happen between her and Charlie, I think their relationship became transactional. And I think it became like, okay, you'll keep speaking at Turning Point events. We'll pay you a ton of money. And in exchange, we'll raise a ton of money because you're still participating in Turning Point. And it was just an arrangement that I think worked out well for them. As this goes on and on and on, I'm like, did that arrangement ever really evaporate? Because the more she attacks them, the more money they're raising. And then, okay, is it true that she's being paid $300,000 by Andrew Wilson to do this?
That's what we hear, yeah.
Okay, so I have to imagine that money is being sent through Turning Point. I have to imagine Turning Point gave the money to Andrew. Andrew gave it to Candace. If she doesn't show up, the money goes back to Turning Point. And if she does show up, it goes to her. So she's still making money from Turning Point.
Well, I don't know exactly how that worked, because it was, I think it was the guy from Whatever Podcast offered $150,000, and then Andrew offered to double it, but now he's crowdfunding for it. So I don't know exactly how that's going to work, but it all has the air of a WWE conflict. I think that's what you sort of get, and because that's what I get too. And it's just like,
I'm just saying nothing is what it seems, and everything is theater, and like, it's, everything's fake.
Everybody's got ulterior motives and is trying to make more out of something than maybe it deserves, or is trying to downplay something that should be focused on. It's just, it's all very bizarre, and I think just a complete distraction at that point, which is why I say I'm not even looking forward to this Andrew, you know, Candace debate, and I think it's like sucking all the air out of the room now. There are more important things to be concerned about right now, in my opinion.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah.
Sorry, and I don't mean to cut you off. I just, like, the problem, you're right. You're 100% right with what you just said. But the problem is the distraction is not Candace. And the distraction is not Turning Point. And the distraction is not Andrew. People can't be distracted unless they want to be distracted.
Right.
And so I'm making this point because, you know, even if you took my, I think Walkway's been doing amazing work for 8.5 years. I mean, we've gone out there, we've done voter registration drives, we've done college tours, we've done whatever. Anytime we do these things that are actually meaningful to changing the culture and stuff, people are like, they're not interested, they don't want to get involved, they don't whatever. But then Candace Owens does some lunatic thing on social media, and 500 million people are like, oh God, I can't wait to, I'm going to take the day off of work so I don't have to. And I'm like, so you're distracted because you want to be distracted. Don't blame Candace Owens. This is you.
No, absolutely. And hell, I fall for it too. I'll be scrolling, and if I see a video that's somebody attacking somebody else, I'm like, I gotta see the attack. I wanna see the drama. I mean, there's something human about that. You wanna see the drama.
Me. Do not question Israel. There you go.
It scared the crap out of me, and I saw it coming.
The man can move silently. You don't know. You don't
I literally
know that.
Watched it happen, and I was still scared. Yeah.
I saw nothing in your eyes that gave it away. Holy goodness. It's completely reset my brain. What are we talking about? Something about Candace Owens?
Yeah. Well, basically.
Here. All right. Alex is giving us props now. We'll be back in just a minute. We got to go to commercial break. Folks, go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. We'll be right back. More with Brandon Straka. We're going to talk more about Candace and Andrew debate coming up.
What's most wrong?
And what the future of the Republican Party is moving forward. How we cling on to the little victories we've had and expand them even further. If we can get through the debate, if we can get through the conversation, that is. We'll be right back.
Do you want to try some? Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, send you some methylene blue. And if you guys want to get it too, you can get it from thealexjonesstore.com. I invented two proprietary products. Gavin, I'm a business owner, supplement formulator, Power Plant and Methyl Drive. You guys got to get them right now. Magnesium, CoQ10, PQQ, Rhodiola Roja, Golden Root. It's got the cordyceps, the zinc, the selenium. It's got the boron as well. Raise your free testosterone. Raise your ability to get through hard days and hard tasks. And ultimately raise the potential of the methylene blue that you're probably already taking if you're watching this network. We have that available for you. It's a really good deal, really good price. People just kind of across the internet have told me they've started taking it and they've been able to get to the gym again. They've been able to get through hard days at work again. Specifically that Power Plant formula. If you're looking for something like Super Meal Vitality from back in the day, I basically invented a better version of that. That's called Power Plant. It's available solo or also in the Power Drive bundle at thealexjonesstore.com. Look up what proper magnesium does for your body. Look up what proper methylated vitamin B12 does for your body. All of that and more is in Power Plant and Methyl Drive, and you can get them all three together on the Power Drive bundle along with the other phenomenal products. We have the turmeric. We've got the MK Ultra, which is a phenomenal multivitamin, also nootropic as well. Ultimate Burn. If you really, you're trying to lose a little bit of weight, here's the thing. I've been doing a good job. I'm almost down to like 205 now. If you want to join me on a weight loss journey, you can get yourself some Ultimate Burn. And all the other products we have, like Methylene Red specifically, are also great for that. Methylene Red also has that CoQ10. Get the turmeric, get the blue, get the gummies, get the colostrum. My grandma is not capping on jaw for real. It really helped her with her hair if you want it. You got the T3 trifecta iodine, an absolute staple of the old network. Got the Ultimate Sea Moss, Ultimate Turmeric, the Bovine Beef Tallow. It's got the methylene blue inside the tallow, incredible antioxidant, methylene blue. I already went over it, tried to with Gavin a little bit. We've got the zeolite, incredible for heavy metal support, dechelation, stuff like that. The Shilajit complex, we've even got smelling salts. Ultimate Life Force, which is absolutely incredible. It's got the natokinase in there. It's got things theoretically to, you know, attenuate certain anecdotal things with the spike protein. Not making a health claim there. Talk to your doctor. It's just a top-rated formula for a reason. The Ultimate CMOS gummies in another form. The creatine, the Ultimate Power. We've got tons of sales on the different forms and flavors of the Ultimate Power pre-workout. We've got the NAD. We've got the Methyl Drive. We've got the MK Ultra. We've got Optimal Human. I got drink mixes for you. I got powders. I got energy gum. This is what you need. We have an electrolyte powder. It is so important in the summer months to get proper electrolyte support. And if you look at a lot of these blends on the grocery store shelf, they are pure garbage. Get yourself some Optimal Human. Get yourself some beef tallow. Get yourself some Atomic Defense. All of that and more is available at thealexjonesstore.com. I did not even mention the water filtration, shower filtration that we have, the Patriot apparel that we have, the collectible coins memorabilia that we have. Literally everything that you could ever want theoretically or practically to support this operation, you can get at thealexjonesstore.com. This is what makes us different. Other people do a show so they can sell a product. We sell the best products in the world so that we can do the best show in the world. That's what makes this operation completely different, completely viewer, listener, supported, funded, owned by you at home when you decide, when you choose to make the decision to support us and get the phenomenal products at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm telling you again, the Power Drive Bundle, Methyl Drive, Power Plant, Methylene Blue, that is like the trifecta.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Gentlemen, this is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on AlexJonesLive.com. I'm here with Brandon Straka of the Walking Away Movement. You can follow him on X at Brandon Straka. And I want to talk about, well, let's finish off what we were just saying about the Andrew Wilson, Candace Owens debate. Because I don't want to be poo-pooing on something everybody is so excited about. But I do, I mean, so do you see this as a, I guess this is the question. Do you, when you asked me to do the America First MAGA debate, I at first said no because I just didn't want to contribute to the divide. I see the divide. I recognize it. I want to try to heal it. And I said, I just don't know if I don't want to be yelling at MAGA people. F Trump. Like, I'm not about that. I don't want to do that. Yeah. So how do you heal the divide without addressing it? How do you address it without making it wider? I mean, does it even matter? Should we just plow forward? What do we do about this?
Are you asking me about the debate?
I'm asking you to solve all of our problems right now in one
sound. And I can do that. That's who I am, and that's okay, what I do. No, the only thing I need clarity on, are we the divide or the Charlie debate or both?
Well, I see them as indicative. I see sort of the Charlies become this sort of, bellwether or dividing line between the sides. I see, you know, what's happening with Andrew Wilson and Candace Owens as being them being sort of icons of these two camps.
So here's my take on this. I totally understand why any normal person would think that the Charlie debate is demonstrative of the divide or as you say, indicative of the divide. In a way, I kind of feel like it's not because I think that it's fringe people on both extremes. Like, I think reasonable people are saying, let's let it play out and like, let's see what happens in the courtroom and let's see what happens with evidence and things like that. Unfortunately, I think what has happened here is that, the Charlie, I don't even think it's about Charlie anymore. And I don't even think it's about what happened to him or his murder. I think it's really, a debate. I'm going to have so many crazy people, stalking and harassing me now after I say this, but I think it's what it's really become is sort of this like fringe people debate about trust in our institutions versus trust in official narratives. And I think Charlie is just sort of the vessel that this debate is happening in. And so, and this is somebody who has no faith in our institutions and has no, I don't trust the FBI. I don't trust the CIA. I don't trust law enforcement. I don't trust, I mean, you know, to a degree. So I'm not some person who's just like, oh, well, if the FBI tells us that's what happened, that's what happened. I don't think that. But it, like, there are real people here. I mean, this guy, he had children and he had a wife and he has parents, and people who loved him, and somebody killed him. And there's a substantial chance that that person could get away with it if people don't calm down. Like, you know, that is a risk factor. And I just think I am a believer that the public has a right to know and the public has a right to ask questions, but like, calm down,
right?
Calm down.
I know. That's I'm exactly the same way. And you know, there is room for nuance in all of this, but it seems like both sides want to extricate the nuance. And in the exact same way that they say, well, if you don't believe the official story 100%, then you're with the Candace Owens and you believe Egyptian planes and exploding microphones. And the other side is kind of saying the same thing, but in an inverted way of, if you aren't, you know, believing us and coming along with us in a full-fledged way, then you're a Fed slopper and you're being paid to do. It's like there's a middle ground here, folks. And there's the fact that, you know, when you study this stuff enough, there are some things where you just go, we're never going to know. I can put all the supposition forward I want. I may be correct, but I accept that if I'm correct, like one of the things I think I asked during the Charlie Kirk, you know, roundtable thing was, if it was Israel, would you expect that ever to be evidenced, ever to have evidence of that, ever for the media to talk about it? And the answer is no. So if you think it's Israel that did it, you might just want to accept that you're just going to have to believe that on faith and you're never going to be provided evidence for that.
Well, yeah, and also, you know, I would say, and this is how I know it's not really about him, even though people, he's kind of like the proxy in this argument, but it's like, you should be able to feel whatever you feel and have whatever opinion you have and be able to talk with somebody who feels the opposite without losing your mind.
True.
And if you can't do it without losing your mind, then it's not really about him, because that doesn't even make sense. I mean, I've pretty much stayed out of it. Like, I haven't even really, I apparently espoused an incredibly controversial opinion when I spoke to Marjorie Taylor Greene, which what I said to her was, I think we should wait and see what evidence presents itself. And after we see all the evidence, I said, I think it's possible that some people right now who are out there really making bold statements may end up finding themselves discredited.
Yeah.
Because I said that, I had a number of people block me and unfollow me. And before they did, they were just like, I used to love you. I used to believe in you, but it's obvious now that you're bought and paid for and you're stupid. You're an idiot. And I'm like, you can't possibly feel this strongly about, like, right. This is about something else. This isn't right. about what you're saying it's about. This yeah. is something else is going on in your head, and Charlie has just become the vessel.
Yeah, the avatar for whatever
you're... For whatever you're going crazy about.
Yeah, totally. And so I guess what the similarity, the commonality between sort of the Charlie stuff and the MAGA divide is Israel. I mean, it goes back to that a lot. That's another thing that you cannot talk about without stepping on one mine or another. One yep. team's red line or the other yep. becomes extremely difficult. And it seems like if nothing else, you know, is what Candace... doing, like, this is a genuine question, is it helping us to have better conversations, or is it making it harder to have these difficult conversations? I genuinely don't know. On one hand, I want to be like, hey, you got to support people who, even if you don't agree with them, I am free speech, I want them to be able to say it. On the other hand, it's like, if the conversation is dominated by the most fringe elements, how valuable is it really? I mean, is it, where do you draw the line of like, oh, I'm a free speech champion, but you know, maybe some self-control is in order.
First of all, before I answer this, I just want to reiterate, you're going to find my body floating in the river tomorrow yeah, because, like, I'm telling you, people are so invested in this and they're so off the rails. Okay, so here it is. And this, what I'm about to say doesn't even have to do with Charlie or his, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with Candace, and who and what should, like, I don't think it's Candace's intention to foster productive conversations. I don't think she's doing this for the reasons that she says she's doing it for. Again, I want to I can't say this enough. This has nothing to do with my opinion of what I think did or did not happen to Charlie Kirk. It has entirely to do with what I think are the motivations of Candace Owens, as the person I have known her to be for over 8 years. I think she's a person with a lot of negative intentions who is extraordinarily good at doing things and making them seem like she's doing things for reasons other than what she's actually doing them for. Did that make sense? Even if, whether you agree or not?
It did, but it sounds like maybe you're dancing around, what you're actually trying to say. I mean, do you think that Candace Owens, what do you think she's doing it for? I mean, is it just the money and attention? Is it just, because she's being incentivized by the reaction she's getting?
My experiences with her starting going back 8 years ago, shortly after I came out of the gate with Walk Away, are that she's an extraordinarily vengeful person and a person who feels very entitled. She's a very entitled person to have what she wants or what she thinks she deserves. And if she does not get that, she will destroy. She's a destructive person. And this shouldn't be controversial to anyone. Look at the breadth of her career and look at how she was with Tommy Lahren, with Ben Shapiro, but like literally every person that she's worked with to get to where she is today, she has had a destructive and negative falling out with and a number of other people along the way. And I've had that with her on a personal level as well. And what I think she is, I've never seen anything like it. I don't deny for us that she's incredibly bright. And she certainly presents very, very well and has kind of like a unique way of, magnetic, I suppose, people kind of gravitate towards. The problem is that there is something pathological about her. And, so she's, you know, normally a woman scorned or, a vengeful woman, would be maybe a little bit more naked in her intentions, you know, like I'm going to get even with my ex-boyfriend, you know, that kind of thing. I think Candace is extraordinarily good at making people not see why she's doing what she's doing and what it's really about. So while everyone thinks this is about justice for Charlie, I think she has a different intention for all of this. And I think a lot of it has to do with getting even with Turning Point, getting even with people within the organization that maybe, you know, Charlie was her connection to the organization as long as, you know, he was around and now he's not around. And so I think what's motivating her now is, you know, he's not around anymore. There's nothing in it for me. And a lot of these people, you know, maybe didn't have my back or I deserve this or I should have had that or I should have whatever. And so,
yeah. And I, as much as I, you know, would disagree with Charlie and disagree with the way TPOSA was being used, especially when it comes to Israel. That was sort of my main beef with them. But I still have always so much appreciated what TPOSA did, the power that had. I mean, hell, look at the event where Charlie lost his life. To have however many thousands of kids packed in on a sunny afternoon listening to this. I mean, that is a cultural phenomenon that I've never seen in my life. And I always, you know, point out my little cousin going to UT in 2016 and having the TPUSA sticker on his water bottle and just thinking, okay, they've made conservatism cool. To some degree, they've made conservatism something to acceptably display on a college campus. That is such a powerful thing. I hate that TPUSA is being torn down in the result of his death. And I hate that, you know, it's our side that's doing it. Again, I cannot see the value of that. I can't see that as like a good thing that TPUSA is being destroyed. I think that's a horrible thing.
Well, I can say too, like, and I don't want to take this to like a dark and morbid and sad place, but I can just say, you know, Charlie and I knew each other, and there were times, you know, we were backstage together at events and so, and I'd say, you know, we had a cordial relationship. Honestly, unfortunately, I think largely because of Candace Owens, there was friction between me and Charlie. There was tension, and I'm not one of those people who somebody dies and I'm like, oh my God, my best friend, you know, like that's the truth. You know, he and I were not close. And there was tension and there was friction I think it was caused largely by her. But I still, to this day, even a moment ago when you were speaking, there are moments I want to burst into tears, like thinking about what happened to him and, the way it happened and I think it was one of the most traumatic things any of us will ever.
Well, that's probably part of it, isn't it? That's the ignition that set off this fire. And if it wasn't so emotional and visceral and horrifying and brutal.
And public.
I'm like choking up right now.
I know.
Because it is. So, I mean, clearly there's this emotional, discordance that's underlying all of it.
Yeah, I will never forget. Do we have a moment that I can, are we just talking?
Yeah.
It's like, it's one of those, you know, where were you when Charlie Kirk was shot?
Yeah.
I will never forget. You know, Walkaway has our first physical headquarters in New York City. It was very exciting for us. And it happened just last year. We've never had a physical headquarters. And, so I was at my headquarters in New York and, it's very much like a startup. You know what I mean? It's like a big room with just junky chairs and everything's junk. But we do have a nice TV in the middle of the room. And, so we were sitting there, we were doing some work and my phone rang and I think it rang several times with a friend of mine, Derek Evans, who like Derek is one of those people. It's very hard to get him on the phone. So if he's calling you several times in a row, something's up.
Yeah.
And, so I answered the phone and I've never heard him like this before. I could even get chills right now just thinking about it. He sounded out of breath and he sounded panicked. And he said, Brandon, dude, he said, Charlie's been shot. And he said, it looks really bad, man. I don't know if he's going to make it. And then he was kind of like, he's like, I'm worried about you. I'm worried. And it was just so many things at once. And the fact that he connected to, I'm worried about you. I was like, what are you talking about? You're worried about me. What does that mean? I didn't realize he was shot in the open in public at one of his events on colleges and, you know, and we do the colleges too. It's not like, you know, what he was doing, but, you know, we're out there with the tables and in a smaller crowd. And, so I'm just going to tell the truth here. My first instinct was like, okay, you're being dramatic,
right,
you know, calm down. Right. You're being dramatic because I honest to God thought like maybe he'd been shot in the arm or something.
Yeah,
like, you know,
yeah.
I thought it was just like, and then I went on social media and the first thing I saw, and it wasn't even just that I saw him being shot. It was that, you know, that angle that's like the worst angle. Mm-hmm. Like it's just right in the middle and it's very close. And it's like, I almost thought it was AI. Like
yeah.
I was just, it was so disturbing. And I knew instantly, I was like, there's no way he's alive.
Yeah.
No way he's alive. My parents, they've known about, you know, the tension between me and Turning Point and Charlie and Candace and all this stuff going back 8 years. And, so I was on the phone with my parents, when they officially said, you know, I knew, but like when they officially said he didn't make it, and my dad said, how are you doing? And I just burst into tears. And I just said, I feel so bad that we didn't ever get to sit across from each other and have a meeting of the minds. And, you know, whatever transpired between us, like, I wish, I hate that he's leaving this planet and that's unresolved.
Yeah. Yeah. And clearly, I mean, it's the loss of his potential. That's the brutal thing. And then, you know, I was watching back and I played on the clip. I played the clip on the show a few weeks ago, but going back to the show immediately after that I did, and already then we had compilations of dozens of people celebrating it, mocking it, teachers, you know, with their faces on the camera singing songs about how much they loved. And, like, I was so convinced that we were about to round these people. I was almost excited, like, this is it. This sucks. This is horrible. But now we are going to do something against the left. The left has exposed themselves as sickeningly evil, and we cannot live like this, being murdered right out in the open. We are finally going to do something about the radical left in this country, and just nothing got done. Those same people who were fired for celebrating the killing of Charlie Kirk have now gotten $1 million payouts from the school districts for firing them. And it's like, so we got less than nothing. We have rewarded the people who are mocking Charlie. And I feel like, if nothing else, the distraction of the murder mystery sing-along that everybody's participating in for the last year, why did we not just focus on just go after the left? Whoever killed Charlie Kirk, it was the left that was celebrating. It's the left that's created this dangerous circumstance where people are being killed. The left, nothing has happened to them. They're more emboldened than ever. Socialists are winning elections. I feel like the Trump administration has squandered this second chance. They squandered this opportunity to make Charlie's death meaningfully impactful on the political stage. Do you understand what I mean?
Not only do I understand what you're saying, that was so beautifully said. I mean, so beautifully said, the way you just laid that out. I'll tell you this. I'm in this kind of rare and elite group of people who already saw that. Because I went through January 6th.
Right.
And and by the way, I'm not speaking on behalf of all J6ers, because there's a lot of J6ers who are still, they still think justice is coming. They still think, you know, that the right thing is going to happen. I have known almost since the beginning of this second administration that very little of what we were promised was going to happen because of the people that were put in charge, because I knew that whether Stan Bongino or Cash or Harmeet Dhillon or Pam Bondi or Todd Blanche or any number of other people, they didn't care about January 6th. None of them took an opportunity to learn anything about it here, including me. Like, I pretty well known, pretty beloved figure in the, you would think just out of a sense of obligation.
Well, they name checked you in particular when they said, we're going to do a shock and awe campaign. We're going to go after the influencers.
Right.
They mentioned you and went after you because of your public profile. That in and of itself is a reason to bring those people up on charges, I think.
And they left no stone unturned. I'm the only person who the DC court system accidentally unsealed all of my sealed documents for 27 minutes, and they accidentally ended up in a bulk email that went to NBC, Vice, MSNBC, etc. So everything that was supposed to be private about my case was leaked to the media, and like just
dirty tricks,
every dirty trick that you can possibly imagine. And
they didn't care.
No, they didn't care. And so I've known for a while that, these opportunities were going to be squandered, and that the justice that all of us thought was going to happen was not going to happen. And I also knew that, for me, January 6th kind of was the thing. And again, I had a different perspective because I was actually going through it, but I thought that was the moment conservatives would rise up. I thought we would actually, okay, this is going to be the thing that gets them out in the streets marching and demonstrating and whatever, and nothing. And, you know, it's funny. I'll never forget, when I became a conservative, you know, because I was a liberal 9 years ago or 8 years, whatever. I started kind of embracing everything and learning and changing my mind about so many things and stuff. And in those early years, we're talking about 2018, 2019 for me, I'll never forget a friend of mine who's always been a conservative and always been, you know, a Republican. We were talking about all the stuff the left does and they get away with it. No one does anything and whatever. And I remember him saying to me at the time, he was like, if the left ever actually really came for conservatives' guns, that would be the moment that, you know, it would be. And he said, even conservative women, he said, you know, you'll see conservative women throw down and fight and whatever. And I was like, yeah. I don't believe that at all anymore. I think if the left came back into power and said, we're coming for your guns, I think conservatives would go, All right.
Oh, that's the most depressing thing I've ever heard.
I'm sorry, but that's, I now don't believe that there's any issue, whether it's Charlie Kirk's murder or January 6th or the 2020 election or COVID, or I've seen too much to believe that there's anything that would be so. We had a socialist running for mayor of New York City and nobody would help me. No one would help me. I was the only person in the entire country who led an effort to defeat Mom Donnie. The Republican Party wouldn't get, and I wasn't asking for money. I just said, will you show up? Will you help blast emails like
right.
about the efforts and what we're doing? No one would get involved and help whatsoever. So I no longer believe that there is an issue, that will cause conservatives to stand up and say, this is the thing now. We're finally going to let the left have it. And, at least not in its current form.
Is that the leadership, or is that because the people, I think, are more extreme than the, you know, people that are online? I mean, I'm the conspiracy theorist extremist, and I come up and say some pretty crazy things. I talk to my normie friends, and they're like, you know, loading their guns. So, I mean, I think the people are like desperate to have a vengeful Republican go in and wreck shop. It's, to me, it's the establishment that just refuses to do it. They have no excuse not to. They always come up with one. So, I mean, do you think that's accurate, or you think the people themselves are sort of demoralized and won't do anything?
I think it's everybody. The establishment did not stop the people from standing up for J6ers. They didn't stop people from demanding that. Well, I mean, I guess there was a little bit of a counter for that. People were, I mean, I don't even know if, you know, the teachers and the stuff with Charlie Kirk, there was kind of an effort to
yeah.
sort of dox them, you know, and get justice. I guess I see that. But I mean, in terms of like actual, like the left is intimidating. They're intimidating when, you know, I'm just a hypothetical example, but it's, you know, when some black kid robs a store, and then the police come and the black kid jumps on the police officer's back and starts, you know, beating him in the head, and the kid gets shot.
They're out on the street.
Millions of people on the left. And you see these demonstrations and they're intimidating. It's like, whoa, look at them. Look at them go. We never have that
yeah.
for anything. Like we kind of had it, after the 2020 election for a couple of months.
Well, and then they did January 6th.
And then they did
and
January 6th.
That really did huge damage to, conservatives' willingness to go out there. Man, I wish we had two more hours to talk. We barely got even into, you know, what the Republican Party needs to do now. We could go on for hours. Obviously, you have to go. You're a busy guy, but, in the last minute here, if you had 1 minute, if you had an elevator pitch to Donald Trump and he says, Brandon, I'm going to do whatever you say. What do I do from this moment on? And you have 1 minute. What is your advice?
I would say, Mr. President, number one, please put all of the foreign issues aside. Concentrate on domestic issues in the American people. Concentrate on mass deportations. That in itself is going to solve so many of the problems that we have, whether it's housing, economy, affordability. Mass deportations is going to have a huge impact on all of that. Plus, it's going to make us all a lot safer, and it's going to give us a lot more trust in our elections and in our country once again. I would also say to him, Mr. President, we have an ever closing window of time. It's closing very, very quickly. We must de-weaponize our Department of Justice. We must de-weaponize the FBI and the CIA and our three-letter institutions. This can happen. The number one thing that needs to happen is some of the greatest victims. How much do I still have? 10 seconds?
Yeah, 10 seconds.
Okay. Call in some of these people like myself and people who have been victims of weaponization. Let us give you our testimonies. Find out who the players were involved. Make sure they're fired, and wherever possible, prosecute the people who did this.
Amen. Absolutely. Brandon Straka, follow him on X at Brandon Straka, the Walkaway Movement. Look for the debates coming out on YouTube and Rumble and possibly X in the future. But make sure you're following and subscribed so you can see them as soon as they come out. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
It's been great. Kelly, we go on for 5 more hours. We just don't have time. Who's got time?
That was fun.
Dirty, dark, dastardly villain is after the methylene blue formula.
Let me out! Well, hello there, folks. Feast your eyes on the magical methylene blue. Don't wait. Get yours today while supplies last.
Abe, hey, I think this is my favorite Alex Jones shirt.
Dude, I totally agree.
Founding Fathers on patrol. Washington and Lincoln rocking the latest Alex Jones shirt. Marching past America's monuments. Liberty is awake. Visit thealexjonesstore.com now.
دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
So we know there's been a DOJ bipartisan cover-up for now almost 20 years of what was happening with Epstein, the Mossad MI6 CIA operative, and the huge honeypot operation he was running that he took over from Ghislaine Maxwell's father, Robert Maxwell. He also worked for former Attorney General's dad at the girls' school, Barr.
Bill Barr's father, Donald Barr, was the mentor to Jeffrey Epstein. He was literally, you know, was a student of Bill Barr's dad.
The emails we have, the millions of them, are so damning. The cannibalism, the sex slavery, the genetic engineering.
There's girls that were there that testified that he had rooms as big as this room right now that were filled with servers and computers and monitors that were recording all that footage that he had, not only in on the island, but in New York, the Zora Ranch, everywhere.
On a plane, camera. The plane was rigged and everywhere.
Where's all that footage?
I can't tell you.
Really?
Yeah. It has to be the right time, the right day.
Let me ask you this. I'm sorry to put a legendary Mossad assassin on the hot seat. But if I was to guess, do you think I would guess right?
Probably. That's why we shouldn't talk about
okay.
it right now.
All right.
And if you look at satellite photos of it and drone photos, you can see the snorkels that come up around the house and 100 yards out from it or so. Those, you don't have those big concrete air vents for structures that don't have things under them.
I will tell you the search took 11 days to actually, you know, drone out the whole entire property. So that tells you what a vast property this was and how large it was.
So we were told the feds went in with cadaver searching dogs and went in with ground penetrating radar. And now we learn none of that was true. The feds did a deal in 2019 when Trump was first in his first administration to let them run the investigation, but that they would then give the state their findings. They haven't done that.
In the Epstein files, one document describes an April 2020 account given to the FBI in Albuquerque from someone whose name is redacted and makes the unsubstantiated claim that one of Epstein's Zorro Ranch victims was raped and became pregnant before the baby was then sacrificed and buried at the Christ United Methodist Church near Albuquerque. We reached out to the FBI Public Affairs Office in Albuquerque and asked if the FBI investigated or followed up on the reported claim, and if so, what were the findings? In an email, the office responded, "We have no comment at this time."
We know from a tip back in 2019 that was never investigated, that there was an allegation that two women were buried on the public leased land there. And so we are still waiting for that part of the investigation to be open.
Were human remains found? Were they not found?
I can't tell you if they were or weren't found, but I guess what I would say is, let's say cadaver dogs did not find anything. It doesn't change the fact that there maybe still could be something there.
These images of Zorro Ranch taken in the early 2000s were given to EWTN News by a former worker at the ranch. Former workers told us they would agree to speak about their time at Zorro Ranch if the New Mexico Truth Commission called on them to testify.
They need to be reached out to, preferably by law enforcement, but they will play, I think, a big role you know, what may or may not have happened at the ranch.
As we continue to formally commence this subcommittee, subpoenas will very likely be issued for those that do not want to voluntarily come forward and speak to us as a subcommittee.
Fundamentally, we need Todd Blanche and the United States Department of Justice to stop stonewalling this agency. It's been 173 days since we first asked for unredacted access to the complete Epstein files, and we still don't have that access, despite repeated assurances from Mr. Blanche, Jay Clayton, and others that they would cooperate with this investigation and help us move things forward so we could try and hold people accountable here in New Mexico.
Specifically, the main thing that this new bill does that we've introduced is forces the U.S. Attorney General to cooperate with state attorneys general that want to prosecute Epstein co-conspirators under state law. And it turns out in New Mexico, that's where the Zorro Ranch was. You hear a lot about Epstein Island. You hear that's almost right. Nothing about Zorro Ranch, but it was expansive. It was massive. People were going there all the time. Crimes were committed there. And some of those aren't barred by statute of limitations. And so the Attorney General in New Mexico would like to prosecute those crimes. And so we're making it easier with this bill. That's one of the things it does.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour of the War Room is on. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, AlexJonesLive.com. Coming to you from the Alex Jones Network at TheAlexJonesStore.com is where you go to support us. I don't know, guys, have we sold out yet? Have we sold out of our concealed carry fanny pack yet? Because it's going to sell out pretty fast. This thing is going quick. And it's a tactical concealed carry bag. So you can, you know, it's designed for easy, quick access to your everyday carry firearm. But it's also just a very cool bag. Comes with five distinct patches along with it, which each one of these, I mean, the patches alone are worth the full price you're paying for this thing. I think it's only $39.99 on thealexjonesstore.com, but you get five patches with it. These patches we could sell for probably $15 a piece if we wanted. We'd probably sell out of these. But you get five of them along with your bags. You can customize it, of course, put your own patches on if you want. But it's a very cool piece of equipment and is going to sell out fast. So if you want to get yours, go now, thealexjonesstore.com. Just one of many ways to support us. Of course, just sharing the link, sharing the content is a fantastic way as well. Of course, just talking about it with your friends and family does more than you know. We have a lot coming up this week. I'll potentially be doing a debate tomorrow night with Zero Hedge, although it keeps getting rescheduled. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm going to open up the phone lines for this last hour, and I want to take your calls, and I want to just do as many like short calls as we can. Like if you just have some piece of information you think I need to know, something you may think I may have missed, something I said, and maybe you can correct me, think I'm wrong about something, whatever it is, give us a call. We'll take your call in this last hour, 512-266-0642. The number again, 512-266-0642. Give us a call here on the War Room. We'll take your calls just as soon as they start coming in. We'll go to those really about any topic. But what I want to know is what people think we can do politically to pull us out of the fire. What is going to happen over the next couple of years? Because I do want to expand our scope a little bit and talk not just about midterms, but midterms go one way, what's the outcome of that? If midterms go another way, what's the outcome of that? And if you zoom out and really look at, you know, where we are and where we're going, the trajectory is not exactly positive, certainly not with DSA members winning elections and, you know, establishment Democrats, you know, beating them occasionally, but certainly the way things are going is not in our favor, and we're going to have to make a change of trajectory. Is that even possible in the current political landscape? Let me know what you think. Give us a call, 512-266-0642, and we'll go to those calls as soon as they come in. We do have some breaking news here, broke a little bit earlier. Officials say U.S. forces are on track to complete the Iraq pullout by September 30th. Which wouldn't that be an amazing headline in any other timeline? Wouldn't that have been an amazing headline to read around this time last year before we were in war with Iran? And how weird is it that now that we're at war with Iran, now we're pulling out of Iraq? That's interesting. I mean, I've been joking since, you know, first couple of weeks of this war that I did want us to get out of the Middle East, just not like this. Just not like this, not running with our tail between our legs, not because we've been bombed out of the Middle East, not because our bases have been destroyed. And this is one of those, if you really want to get into the 5D chess, which, as I was explaining yesterday, everything Trump does, you can interpret it like this. And I do not believe that this is the case, but there is something funnily ironic, humorously ironic about the fact that we want Trump to get out of the Middle East. We've been begging to get America out of the Middle East and shut down our bases for years and years and years. And apparently all we need to do is go to war with Iran. Apparently go to war with Iran, then not only do you take the bases out of the Middle East, they clean them up for you. They take out the arrays that we would have had to leave there otherwise. So, you know, very convenient. But I wonder if this doesn't have to do, because when Trump met with the Iraqi prime minister, I believe it was, in the Oval Office last month, I noticed a couple of things that he said that made me think, okay, they are still aiming for boots on the ground in Iran. They're not going to do American boots on the ground. It looks like they're trying to establish some sort of Kurdish-Iraqi militia force to do the on-the-ground fighting for them. And, you know, Trump just saying things like, oh, this guy's a great leader in Iraq and other places, just like little things that was like, okay, this makes sense. This makes sense. They're now working with Iraq, working with Turkey, working with the Kurdish, you know, people who refused to participate at first with Iran, but maybe if we sweeten the deal a little bit, or maybe if we gave them some weapons that they wanted, it seems like that is one of the, you know, strategies that they're pursuing in how to continue the Iran war is use Iraqis to do it. And I wonder if this has anything to do with that, or if this is just because we cannot defend our bases in the Middle East, so we have to move them away from the danger zone more into Jordan and on the borders of Israel, because we don't actually have any bases in Israel, you know, even though they're our greatest ally in the region. And obviously, you know, according to a lot of people, we control them. They do not allow us to have bases in their country. We do have bases in Lebanon and Jordan and all over the place, but not inside Israel itself. So we're moving everything back to around to like where Jordan is. We're not even really trying to protect the Gulf state allies as we were, which is why they're sort of pushing us to settle this thing once and for all. U.S. military is on track to pull all of its forces out of Iraq by the end of September, officials said Wednesday, marking the end of a presence that started with the 2003 invasion against Saddam Hussein. Yeah, so guess that proves all you wrong who said it was a forever war, huh? Yeah, you said it was a forever war. Really, it was just a 23-year war, okay? So last time I checked, 23 years was not forever, okay? So if a war doesn't last until the end of time, I guess you can't call it a forever war, can you? So I guess that proves all the naysayers wrong who said we'd be stuck in the quagmire of Iraq forever. Not forever, only for a generation, okay? Washington and Baghdad agreed in 2024 to wind down the much smaller U.S.-led operations against the Islamic State group. U.S. troops pulled out of bases in most areas of Iraq last year, but maintained a presence in the semi-autonomous northern Kurdish region. Bases there have regularly come under attack since the U.S. and Israel launched the war in Iran since on February 28th. Iraqi Prime Minister Ali al-Zadi met with Admiral Brad Cooper, who leads the U.S. CENT command. On Wednesday, al-Zadi said that in a statement afterwards that he had affirmed September 30th as the fixed and final date for ending the military mission of the global coalition to defeat ISIS in Iraq and completing the departure of the forces. We did it. We won. I guess, in a way, from a certain perspective. So, yeah, that's the latest there, as well as this, which, again, I just, what are you even supposed to say? Trump says the U.S. now has total control over the Strait of Hormuz and might, quote, keep it. Okay, man, I guess, you know, whatever. I mean, literally, it's like, you know, what are you even supposed to say? Trump puts out these truth tweets. I can't even bother to read them. Cause like, who cares? What he's saying doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can't actually glean anything from it. You know, it doesn't matter really. It's honestly like when I scroll past his truth social posts on, you know, people post on X, new Trump social. I almost can hear the like TV in the background, you know? Where it's like you're reading it, you know, I can see his words and it's just like you just hear like, and it's like, okay. And whatever, you know, it's just like noise. It's just noise. Doesn't mean anything. We own the strait now. Okay, great. Just nuts. The number of vessels tracked transitioning the Strait of Hormuz fell to a 1 week low of just 8, according to a data reported by the Reuters news agency. About 130 ships a day passed through the vital waterway before the war started on February 28th. Six people on a vessel in the Red Sea were killed by the Iran-backed Houthi rebels, Yemen's Coast Guard said on Tuesday. So we control the strait. We've won the war 50 times. It's not a war, except it is two distinct wars and all of its nonsense, and none of it ever had to happen and shouldn't have happened and shouldn't continue happening, but here we are. Out to your calls now. Bart in Georgia. Thanks for calling in, Bart. And again, I want to go to as many as possible, so try to keep your comments to about a minute or two if you can. Thanks for calling in, Bart. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I heard you talking about late-term abortion, and I don't disagree with what you said, but you didn't provide a solution. I know how to stop it. Using block cameras against the people that put them in. Every time a residing female goes to get a late abortion in another state, track them and arrest them, and then that will stop the rest of them from going. So use their own technology against them to stop late-term abortion and to track the organ trade of all the cars going in and out.
Thank you. That would probably be that would certainly cause a lot of strife on the Democrat side if they were to find flock cameras outside of abortion clinics like we see them outside of gun ranges. But they're not going outside of abortion clinics, are they? Yeah, no, the easy way to stop it is to make it illegal. That's basically it. That's how you stop murder. Yeah, make it illegal. Problem solved. Really, I think what needs to happen is there needs to be, and I've been saying this for years. I've been saying this for the entire time of InfoWars. There needs to be some law, and it needs to go beyond the law. It needs to be a genuine understanding of the American people. There needs to be something about the sacredness of DNA, the sanctity of DNA, that your DNA, the moment you're conceived, is different from either one of your parents' DNA. And I think you have an inalienable human right to unaltered DNA. And when you focus on the DNA aspect, it's pretty obvious that you're not your mom, right? The baby in the belly has a different DNA than the mother has. So it's not the same person. It's not an outgrowth of the mother. It is an independent, unique human being with its own DNA that is unlike anybody else's DNA. It's only half like its mom's. It's not its mother's DNA. It's something different entirely. That way, you can not only make the case for not allowing abortions because, yes, it's a crime of murder, but that murder is defined by severing the continuation of a unique strand of DNA, which should be illegal. But it would also, and I think we should be thinking about this now so we're not having to react once these things happen, it would also potentially preclude altering DNA in the womb of the baby. I think, like, if you say DNA is sacred and it is a manifestation from God and that we are not allowed to either end this unique life as defined by its DNA or alter its DNA in any way, because you as a human being have a right to be born naturally with your natural condition and your natural characteristics. And I think it's extremely troubling knowing that not only are people aborting babies at 34 weeks, but also the technology to change people's DNA in the womb or alter them in some way, designer babies, this sort of stuff. I think it is a violation of their human rights before they're even born, and we should be concerned about that. So that would be my solution, is write a law about the sacredness of DNA and how every human has a right to their DNA being unaltered without their permission and informed consent. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Sean in California now. Go ahead, Sean. You're on the air.
Yeah, Chase, Harrison. Sorry about that. Brain fart.
You're all good.
I was thinking with all this time and everything we just had discussing, Brandon, yourself, others having these debates, that's exactly, with the one-year anniversary of Charlie's passing coming on, that's exactly what the globalists can't have, is we coming together as people, having debates and discussions. And I was thinking perhaps with that anniversary coming up, maybe you guys at InfoWars could have maybe a candlelight vigil and some type of panel in which you guys all discuss what Charlie's passing meant to our movement of patriots across the country. Because I know people from all different causes who were all grieved when Charlie passed. I went to his Riverside event out here at UCR, and there were thousands of people there. This thing is a generational thing, and it's not so much who killed him or who didn't kill him. It's what they wanted to do as a message. They don't want us coming together and having honest conversations and moving forward as a people. So I'd like to get your take on that. Maybe you guys doing an event or something, and I'll give it up to you, Harrison. Go for it.
I think that's an absolutely fantastic idea. I do think that this has been the greatest disappointment in everything following Charlie Kirk's assassination, is that it didn't bring us closer together like it should have. It maybe did for a few days or so, but the division happened pretty dang quickly. And again, I don't even understand this, because there are times where I'm like, is this my fault? Because like, and I didn't mean to, but I did provide sort of the best evidence. Still to this date, I would consider it the best evidence of being suspicious of Israel. I don't regret it or anything, but there are times where I'm just like, how did we mess this up so bad? How did we go so off the rails? I was, one of the first, and it's funny because you can still watch my interviews and videos from September of 2025. I believe everything, like nothing has changed since then. Nothing has changed at all. And at the time it was like, hey, look, I think there's very good reason to think Israel's doing it, but the left is the ones celebrating it. The left are the ones like actually cheering for this and making videos, laughing about it and talking about how they want it to happen to more people. We have to focus on that. It's always been confusing to me that we didn't do that because people are questioning it. Like, that doesn't make any sense. You can question the thing, but also just better safe than sorry. Go after the people who are celebrating it and providing the civilizational paradigm in where a thing like this could happen. So it's been such a disappointment, and obviously, his death left a gigantic gaping hole in the array of Republican institutions, and it's created a rift that is so hugely damaging to our movement, however you want to define that. But the movement that includes Nick Fuentes and Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson and Donald Trump, like this movement of the West and Christianity, however you want to define it, has been so severely damaged by this, when in reality we should have been able to make lemonade out of the lemon. So yeah, I think absolutely, the anniversary of his murder will be a very pertinent time for reflection and hopefully, coming together and reminding ourselves of how we felt the day it happened, which we've played the video a couple times. And, I was sitting behind the desk at the InfoWars studio going, we are going to tear these people up. Trump is going to unleash the hounds. And finally, we're going to see some movement. Finally, it's becoming aware, it's becoming apparent to everybody danger that we're all in and the seriousness with which we need to take it. And it just didn't happen and just never happened, which again is why I asked Brandon, like, isn't it the leadership that's doing this? Cause the people, we're like, we want this to happen. We're like begging for it to happen. But we know that like, we do not have the ability. I can't go out and punish a leftist. Like, that's a crime. I'll be arrested. They're not going to go easy on me. We need the government to do this. That's why we put them in. And it's to avoid the ultimate clash of violence later, that we need the government to do it in a systematic and lawful way now. So hopefully, a year on, maybe we can push that message on the anniversary, God willing. Thank you for the call, Sean. Troy in Texas is on the line now. Go ahead, Troy. You want to talk about this pullout of Iran? You're on the air.
Hi.
Howdy.
Hi, Harrison. I agree with you. We need to get out of Iran. And that you were saying, somebody said, we've won the Iraqi war. If that was a general or whoever it was that said that, why don't we remind him about the babies in the incubator and that the whole thing was a fraud? He needs to step down in disgrace. Mm-hmm. I also want Michael Flynn to step down in disgrace because he knows all about 9/11, and I wouldn't doubt that he helped run it.
Hmm.
I want him stepping down. He's a fraud. But I want to tell you, Harrison,
Well, no, it's just, you know, it's like with everything that we've suffered in the last 10 years, from Russiagate to COVID to transgender, all this stuff, it's like we never even got justice for 9/11. We're 30 years behind. It just hit me while you were saying that. But go on. Continue, sir.
Yes, you're right. And what I want to say, what we should be going to war with or about, and I haven't heard you talk about this, and Alex might have touched on it, but not enough. What is unacceptable, Harrison, is that South Korea has become communist. It is unacceptable. We will not let China touch Taiwan, but yet here we're set back and let South Korea be taken over.
Well, why do you say that? That was out of left field for me. I hadn't heard anything about that. What do you know about South Korea? I mean, I know they're like they had that big scandal where their president was in a cult. I mean, South Korea is kind of a weird place. Is it being taken over by communists? I would think they're the one country that, like, I mean, they're like the Israel of communism, right? I mean, they understand the threat and have a militarized border with North Korea. How are they falling for communism?
Okay, well, I thought they were taken over. Possibly I'm wrong on that. I thought they fell to communism.
You might know more than I do. There's been some bizarre, you know, political upheavals there. But you think we should be focusing more on that? I mean, we're taking away batteries from South Korea to go put them in the Middle East because we're you know, Iran destroyed all of our missile launchers there. So we're sort of leaving South Korea out to flap a little bit.
Yeah, I don't like that part. I want them free. I don't want them falling to communism. And I might have made an error on that one. I'm not 100%. I'm sorry on that one.
Well, you might be right. Like I said, I just don't know. But, you know, maybe that's something we need to look into. You know, thank you so much for the call, Troy. I'm going to go quickly to Godzilla here before we go to break because he's talking about Japan, close to South Korea. Maybe there's a connection there. Thanks for calling in, Godzilla. You're on the air.
Yeah, to your question, I think one of the most important things that we've yet to do as American white Christians and American Christians in general is we need our own form of synagogue. We need to assemble weekly or daily like the Jewish people do at the synagogue and work together. Many hands make light work. That's how this country was formed, with the founding fathers in bars and pubs meeting all the time and figuring out these problems and working together, because it's too huge of a problem for any small group of people to do alone. And
that is really with the founding fathers. That was like, you know, Masonry sort of provided that. That was sort of the informal network where, you know, the leaders of the area would go and meet. It would be like, you know, Masonic temples, right?
Yes. Yeah. You know, about a third of the U.S. presidents were openly Masonic, had Masonic ties. You know, a lot of George Washington and a lot of the original OG ones were heavily involved in the Masonic Lodge. And that's kind of like obviously a group that's toe-to-toe with Israel right now. And, you know, you talk about the Israel influence, but I think the Masons have them a lot in check, and there's actually a battle between them because of COVID, with a lot of the Masons getting the injection from the infiltrated medical system here. And, you know, kind of a pseudo war between secret societies, which always happens. You know, it's not just one giant group. It's many different groups. And,
well, I think you're exactly right. We're coming up on a commercial break. I'm sorry to cut you off, but no, I completely agree. And look, the thing is, a lot of people are sort of recognizing this, and there's a there's a market there now for, you know, sort of private clubs. And I encourage you, like, go look around, go on X, go on Facebook and start looking for a group, you know, in your hometown. These aren't secret societies, but they are like private clubs where you can go and meet people and talk. And, you know, you go to one of these things. I've been to a few of them here in Austin with a great group of conservative people. And it really is refreshing. Like, you come away with it way more hopeful and going, okay, at least there's like 50 dudes in this city that have my back and are on the right train. It's just not secret.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out at the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones, and the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system. Even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots, and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us, and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market, and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
There you go, folks. Happening now in Spain. The beauty of a solar eclipse. absolutely incredible. One of those times it's made unavoidably clear that we are on a rock flying through space. And we probably don't deserve it. We're going to go out to your calls here momentarily. I have a few more things to cover, including this story, which should send shivers down your spine. If you've been paying attention to this stuff for any amount of time, should be very troubling to you, not only to learn that the head of Mossad is now taking over a debatably American defense tech company, but what that company does and is doing and is designed to do. Story from calcalistech.com. Former Mossad chief David Barnea joins Ondas as defense tech company builds AI-powered warfare platform. Former Mossad director David Barnea is moving from Israel's intelligence establishment to the private defense industry, joining NASDAQ-listed Ondas as global president and chairman of its defense division at a time when the company is attempting one of the most ambitious consolidation efforts in the rapidly expanding autonomous warfare market. Ah, yes, the autonomous warfare market. Do you love capitalism? Barnea's appointment comes after Ondas spent the last year aggressively expanding through acquisitions, buying defense technology companies across the United States, Israel, and Europe as it seeks to combine drones, intelligence systems, counter-drone capabilities, robotics, and artificial intelligence into a unified military technology platform. The company recently agreed to acquire U.S. defense technology company DZYNE Technologies for $875.8 million, its largest acquisition to date. The deal followed purchases of Israeli mission management software company Omnisys for approximately $200 million and Scotland-based CyberHawk for approximately $125 million, alongside earlier acquisitions, including Israeli companies Aerobiotics, Roboteam, and Synetrix. Okay, so it looks like this, looks like we're probably going to be hearing a lot more about this Ondas Corporation, and it sounds like they're building the unified platform to bring all of these various autonomous military technologies into one paradigm that they can wield in total at once. The strategy has transformed Ondas from a niche autonomous systems company into a broader defense technology group focused on what it describes as multi-domain warfare, integrating intelligence connection, collection, communications, autonomous platforms, and AI-powered decision-making. It's being led by the former head of Mossad, who was head of Mossad from 2021 through 2026, which means he's still in Mossad, meaning Ondas Defense Limited, an American company, is now effectively serving as the, you know, private version of the globalist control system. I again think we need to pay attention to, especially like what the people who are doing this say. Maybe now would be a good time to rewatch the Eighth Front War documentary on my ex at Harrison H. Smith, because they laid out pretty clearly the way that first you need to consolidate all of AI into a single platform, and only then can you have the ubiquitous comprehensive surveillance necessary to enslave everyone. So this seems like a step in that direction. Just crazy. But just, I hope you understand, you know, what this really means. When the head of the CIA or the head of Mossad is going to become in charge of a defense technology company who out of nowhere has been able to make billion-dollar acquisitions of all of these various autonomous warfare systems, combining them all in one place, where do they get the money? They bring it out of thin air. It's not, this isn't a matter of like, oh, they think it's profitable to buy this. This is a like globalist control scheme operation. That's all this is. So the money is immaterial. It doesn't matter to them. They aren't trying to make a profit. They don't necessarily have to. They simply are like, okay, here's the design. We're going to need a company to be the umbrella company over all these others. In order to do that, they're going to have to buy up these other companies. And I'm sure Ondas is owned by BlackRock, which is why we like to depict the New World Order Illuminati power class network of the powers that be as a pyramid, because this is how you create that pyramid structure. You have a corporation at the top who owns divisions of all these other companies, And that way you have one very small number of controllers who can wield control over a vast amount of humanity who don't even know they're being controlled because they're simply taking directives from their corporation's management, not knowing that it's all coming from literally Mossad. Let's go now. I want to go to this clip because this just, I don't even know what to say about this. So clip number 13 here from Kanoka the Great. Fox News' John Roberts says he developed pericarditis after his COVID shot. Let's watch.
Breaking right now, Republican Senators Ron Johnson and Rand Paul releasing the first batch of text messages from Dr. Anthony Fauci's government iPhone. In one exchange from January of 2021, Fauci, then CDC Director Rochelle Walensky, and then Surgeon General Vivek Murthy discussed COVID vaccination and pregnant women. Fauci flags a potential concern after the second dose, writing that many people experience, quote, significant cytokine storm and fever, and that this, quote, theoretically could be associated with miscarriage in the first trimester. Walensky responds, quote, definitely a good point, especially after dose two. A cytokine storm is essentially when the body releases too many inflammatory signals that could cause high fever, inflammation, and in extreme cases, life-threatening illness. So this is just coming to light now, Sandra, that Fauci had these concerns. And I remember when I got the boosters, I developed pericarditis. Then that went away. Then when I had the second booster, it came roaring back again. So, you know, the body reacts differently to these things depending on who you are.
Okay. A couple things about this. First of all, Anthony Fauci and Rochelle Lewinsky are mass murderers. Okay, so they should probably be charged with that. I understand that their co-conspirator used a robot to write them a pardon covering everything they ever did ever, things charged and not charged. I don't think we need to be bound by that when seeking justice for the mass murder that they carried out. That would be first off. Second off, you got pericarditis from the COVID shot, and then you got another COVID shot. That's what he said right there. He said he got pericarditis, which is like myocarditis, it's like a severe heart condition, after his first shot, and then it came back when he got his booster shot. This is the type of thing that it's like, are you a human being? Are you a human being? Do you have the ability to think for yourself? You did something that gave you a heart condition, and then you did it again. A thing that never had to happen, for a vaccine for a disease that was never a danger to you. You got pericarditis, and then you went back for another one? The man should be in a cage. The man is not fit to be a human being. And he doesn't even realize it. He says this like it's normal. Like he doesn't even realize what he's saying. It's this type of thing that's just like, again, what am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to say? I can sit there and be like, you shouldn't get a booster. It might give you a heart disease. And what do I do if the person's like, no, it already did. No, I already did get the heart thing from the shot. I'm going again. Okay, then kill yourself. I don't care anymore because what the hell is wrong with you? What the hell is wrong with everybody is my question. Crazy. Oh, it's just absolutely insane. Finally, we'll go out to your calls, just after this video, but I gotta show you that. I mean, I gotta show you this one. I can't not show you this one. Clip 23 from The Telegraph. So Ceuta in Spain is still absolutely inundated with migrants. Their beach looks like Africa now. Big surprise. Totally destroyed and horrifying. Children have been raped. Women have been raped. It's been the disaster that it obviously was. Thank you, America and Israel, for this very clever maneuver you did. But they've decided to do something different. And this is everything all in one, right? Let's go to clip number 23. As The Telegraph reports, the queue of migrants watched in bemusement as volunteer clowns attempt to lift their spirits. Dutch clowns been sent to entertain migrants at the camps. A troop of three clowns are associated with aid organization Salam Noord. They performed for migrants queuing for food at the Loon Plague Camp in southern France. And just what are we doing? Just what are we doing here? You're dressing up like clowns to entertain the invaders? This must be so baffling to the migrants. I guess the idea, this would make sense, potentially, if they were real refugees. Yeah, clowns entertain migrants and smugglers bound for Britain. This just must be so weird for the migrants. Jugglers and smugglers together at last. Jugglers and smugglers. You know, if this was like a bunch of children, right, who are fleeing from war and have been traumatized, maybe they'd love to see a clown. Maybe it would lift their spirits. It's like they're treating these people. These people are just rapists and murderers here for plunder. And yet we're playing this big game, like we're pretending like they're these poor, besotted migrant refugees who, like, we need to lift their spirits. They're like, maybe it's a defense. I don't know. Have any of the clowns been raped? Maybe this is a new, you know, we know that women in Europe walk around with pigs to keep the migrants away, or dogs sometimes. They, you know, make themselves look unattractive so they don't get stared at and groped on the train. What if they all dressed up like clowns? What if women dressed up like clowns? How do Muslims feel about that? Could be worth a try. Could backfire. We don't know. But I just, you know, there's just something about the absurdity of a bunch of adult men invading a country in order to conquer it. And the people being invaded are like, send out the clowns to entertain them while they stand in line. And we systematically, like, very, in a very orderly fashion, deliver the plunder to them. It's genuinely insane. It's genuine. And I would love to, like, hear what the migrants think about it, if they have any idea what the hell is going on. Only 50 miles away, or meters away, gangs of Kurdish people smugglers huddled in tents and plotted the next batch of crossings over the English Channel. Send the clowns with them. Put the clowns in the boat. See what happens. All right. Out to your calls now. But, I mean, come on, guys. Dutch clowns welcoming the invader rapist. Great. It's great. Let's go to Friendly. Friendly in Minnesota. Thanks for calling in. Friendly, you're on the air. Friendly.
Here today. And can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. I was listening to Alex earlier today, and a lot of the callers had a lot of good solutions. And I'm not saying we shouldn't do certain political things, but I think if we search our feelings in our heart of hearts, I think we all know where this ends. And
rivers of blood? Are you talking about the rivers of blood I see when I close my eyes?
Something like that. And yeah. I think that instinct that we have, that's your ancestors calling out to you to say you need to save civilization or everything is lost. And the problem with white people, and ironically enough, our greatest strength, is that we tend to intellectualize everything.
Mm.
And I think we need to learn to turn it off, just temporarily. Because if we don't, we will perish. We need to think of a survival mindset. And you cannot reason with these people. And ironically enough, this is one of the areas where the maritime admiralty law weirdos are right. We don't have a nation. We don't have justice. We are slaves. We are lambs for the slaughter in a slaughterhouse. And we need to start acting like that. So my solution is this. If you are a white man of fighting age, join your local active club. I'm not going to tell you how to find them. You can figure it out for yourself. If you're too lazy to do it, I can't help you. They will meet up with you and vet you. You'll put on some gear and you'll spar. You'll go to the gym and work out. You'll go for a hike. You will build camaraderie. What we need is collectivization. Collective action. We need to become intimidating. I call it good old boy nationalism. Bunch of white boys in pickup trucks going out in the neighborhood and making their communities safe, because the cops won't do it. No one's coming to help us. And I think the sooner we do that, we will quickly realize how easy it is. If you look at 1933, when the National Socialists came to power, they basically turned the entire country around in a year. And I think once we gain a little momentum, we will be shocked by how easy it is, and we will feel ashamed that we didn't do it sooner.
I want you to keep going, Friendly. I completely agree with what you're saying, and hell, you could point to 1933, or you could point to El Salvador, where they equally, you know, cleaned everything up. Obviously, you know, it's weird because our situation is worse than El Salvador because of how big we are and how complicated we are, but they had a worse, you know, crime system that, you know, we could very much follow their pattern. I completely agree. What advice would you have for, you know, obviously you're not going to tell people exactly which groups to join or anything, but just give people a starting point. Like if I'm a young man or a middle-aged guy that wants to get involved in a active group, what would I search? What terms would I start with? And certainly how would I find one in my area? Any tips for that?
Telegram, active club. They're in every single state in America. They're all over Europe. France is huge with them. They're all over the place. And Harrison, buddy, you're not going to like me saying this, but you got to go to the gym. I'm sorry. I know you don't like it. I know you don't want to hear it. But I know you have time. You can do 50 push-ups, dude. You can do 100 push-ups. I need you to become a threat because I want you to survive this. You have no idea what's coming. Well, you do, but it's going to get so bad. And we need to be a threat. The threat that we face is not just death. It is our wife and our children getting raped to death in front of us, and there's nothing we can do about it. A fate far worse than death. And if we are not able to put a spanking on these people, then it's all lost. And we have to do it. And a lot of these problems would resolve themselves. The women problem, it's their ultimate sexual fantasy to have some white knight, no pun intended, come in and save the day, rescue them from some savage.
Well, that's kind of the best
problems instantly.
That's the best example is the fact that progressive women are going towards Islam and are like, you're genuinely like, well, they're the strong men. What are you going to do about it? They're going to beat you up. I mean, literally they gravitate towards strength, and it is completely in contradiction of everything they claim to believe, but you see the results. I mean, there's something very fundamental about this. Absolutely. And I mean, I've been pointing this out for a while, especially in places like the UK. It's not just that they are being trained and because they have diversity programs that they don't mess with the Muslims. It's because the Muslims will kill them. It's because the Muslims have weapons and walk around in gangs and beat people up, and the cops literally are incapable of stopping them. It is actually their physical presence and the physical threat they pose, which makes them untouchable by the government. That's absolutely true.
If we are culpable for any of these white women who get hurt, any of these children, although it wasn't us who brought them in, although it wasn't us who did the bad acts, it is our duty to defend our race, period.
And obviously, the race is the thing that's under attack, which again, it's like, you might not, you know, think about things in this way, but your enemies do. So like, You might sit there going, well, I'm not a white supremacist. I don't, you know, consider myself a white person or whatever, you know, however these people, justify their stances. It doesn't matter because you are white and they see you as white and they see you as an enemy and they hate white people and are trying to destroy you. So it's like, it's not even an option for you to like not see yourself like that. It doesn't matter. You're targeted for your race. So like, you accept that already. Make white people scary again. I feel like that's what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. You nailed it. Have a good one, Harrison.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that was powerful. I really like that. It's true. Collectivizing, collectivization. And this is why I think the whole, you know, individualism and small government thing, it's just been a psyop. It's just been a complete psyop that only one race is falling for. And that makes it untenable. If everybody went along with it, okay, now we can have a discussion. But when it's literally everybody else happy to use the government to their own ends, happy to, you know, get in power and benefit their constituency, then okay, that's the way the game is played. You have to just play the game or else you lose. And in this case, you lose, you die. So play the game. I completely agree. Thank you for that call, friend. Let's go to Nick in Arizona now. Thank you for calling in, Nick. Perhaps we have a political out here in the midterms, or is the politics over and our friend Friendly is right. There's just time to train. Nick, what do you think about the midterms?
Well, I think your friend could be correct, and thanks for taking my call, Harrison.
Thank you.
I have been under a lawfare, 12 lawsuits since 2022 under a far-left group, basically equivalent to the Black Lives Matter. I've tracked all their funding through the NGO network. I mean, the same group that funded the Southern Law Poverty Center is the same group that's funding the group that's attacked me. It's NDN Collective. That's NDN spelled out, but remove the vowels, so it's N-D-N. And I'm really disappointed in Trump and the lackluster response in regards to the weaponization of government and those that have been targeted. This would have not went forward if the DOJ did not bring forth their investigation, which, by the way, I still cannot get the findings from their investigation. So I think Trump needs to come clean with the American people and say the complaint department's open, and start tracking who did what, and take the grievances. And I really think that's the only way he can win the midterm, as he comes to the American people and say the complaint department's open. We have our own department to handle the victimization or the weaponization of the government and go forward from there. But, I mean, I got attacked. I mean, it is so sophisticated and brilliant how this all went down. I mean, if you look at the MacArthur Foundation, and you look at their Nigeria project, and, you know, Victoria Nuland's over there looking at the elections, or you look at the MacArthur Foundation Safety and Justice Challenge Grant, which I blew the whistle in my local community, they were hiding the grant from us. But basically, it was critical race theory for the jails.
Oh.
We went from a small town, Rapid City, South Dakota, murder of two a year to 25, and all violent crimes were following that increase. I mean, rapes, everything. Not only that, when the cops would show up, take, for example, somebody that was getting beat up. The cops, they'd get the call for service for aggravated assault. The cops would show up and then reclassify it as mutual combat for the FBI.
Right, and we saw that in D.C., how they were falsifying crime rates that way. So you exposed it. Are you on social media? Is there a way I can find, have you documented this anywhere?
Yeah, you can go to Nick Uhre.
How do you spell that?
N-I-C-K-U-H-R-E 1977 on X. And I think you know my friend Chad Olson.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, when I exposed this grant, all hell broke loose for me and my family. I have deplatformed, you name it. You know, and what's so interesting is the way our deplatforming worked, because we own a hotel. The name of the hotel is the Grand Gateway Hotel. And I could get into that with our lawsuit against Expedia and Bookings.com. But, I mean, people really need to wake up on how this took place, how people were being targeted, the role that the NGOs and the nonprofits worked.
Well, I mean, tell you what, Nick, it sounds like you have really unique insight on this. I just followed you on X. I think I just followed you. I almost certainly did. I see your first post about how they murdered your mother. I'd love to hear more about this from you, and maybe you can come on and explain it in a full segment, but we're just running out of time right now, and I appreciate your call. And obviously, when they, you know, target you, you get a very clear vision of the complicated and sophisticated networks that they have in operation around the country, and it can seem absolutely overwhelming. I'd love to hear more about that. Thank you for the call, Nick. Thank you for everybody for being here with us. Of course, support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Make sure you get the fanny pack now while you can. The concealed carry pack is on sale. You get those awesome patches, and it won't be here much longer. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com, and we will see you tomorrow for the next episode of The War Room.
Dirty, dark, dastardly villain is after the methadone brew formula.
Let me out of here! Let me Well, hello there, folks. Feast your eyes on the magical methylene blue. Don't wait. Get yours today while supplies last.
Abe, I think this is my favorite Alex Jones shirt.
Dude, I totally agree.
Founding Fathers on Patrol. Washington and Lincoln rocking the latest Alex Jones shirt. Marching past America's monuments. Liberty is awake. Visit thealexjonesstore.com now.
دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.